Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you on this Thursday?
I'm good. I'm good
really?
Now. I'm
are
good.
You?
Here.
On the classic 1 to 10 scale, how good would you say you are today?
Overall today,
yeah.
I'd say probably a 6.5.
Really?
Right,
a 6.5?
Right this moment, I may be up to an 8.
Is somebody deluding herself about the nature of her own internal barometer?
Okay.
A 6.5?
Okay, so far the day was, let's call it a 4.5.
I was going to say, here's the thing. I don't mean to make you sound the, I don't want to make you feel worse about things or just sound like I'm being a negative Nelly. If you had asked me just moments ago what I thought you would have rated today as, I would say that my guess would have been you would have said like 3. I'm not saying that I think today's been a 3. But if you said like, where do you think Don Taylor would rate the day so far? Today being Thursday, August 26th, on a scale of 1 to 10, I would have said a 3. A scale of 1 to 5, like a 1.2.
I'm never sure how to rate things on these scales, though. Like, I remember when my hips were bad and I was all crippled up with stuff and I'd go to the doctor and they'd
crippled say, up with stuff.
How do you rate your pain today? And I was never sure exactly what do they mean. Do they mean like today compared to like how I am normally?
Yeah, that's
how.
Do
you mean today as in like the most pain I've ever experienced ever?
That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to, in fact, say 10 being the worst pain you have ever experienced.
See?
That is the way that the medical practitioners are supposed to do
so
that
now,
sort of a thing.
Compared to like the worst day I've ever had.
Today's a 9.
Today's like a 6.5.
Where would you rate today in terms of, and when I say today, I mean today in terms of doing this program and Legion of News, because those are the only things that really matter in your day.
Yeah.
Where would you rate today compared to like yesterday?
Oh, compared to yesterday,
yeah.
It's like a 2.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not trying to compare this to other than the day you were married, the day that a kitten followed you home from school. I don't care about any of that.
Just as far as all of the days I have had since
you don't
we've started
exist when you're not here
doing
Don.
This, I'd say today is like has been at best a 3.
This studio is the only place you are truly alive. Outside of here, those are just that's just a fiction. The rest of your existence outside of this room, it's a figment, Don. All right. Well, to try to cheer you up a little bit. I have the gayest opening to the program in the history of broadcast. I put together just a I didn't want to say it's a massive. It's just a few things that I've linked together for you. It's to turn your frown upside down, Don.
Well, thank you, Rick.
All right. So are you all right? So let's we'll begin this now, ladies and gentlemen. The Rick Emerson Radio Program begins here, and just we'll just start with a little.
All right, Toronto. You feel good? All right then, listen. You know, we may be under clear blue skies, but you know, it's getting a little cool out tonight, but that ain't gonna stop us, because if we try hard enough, we're gonna get this place. I said we're gonna get this place harder than hell. All right, listen. I wanna know if we got any people here tonight that like to get high. We got any people tonight that are high? All right then, listen. You know, every once in a while we like to get a little wasted. We like to take a taste of alcohol. And I tell you, when we won't get going, we ain't gonna be drinking no Southern Comfort, no. No, we ain't gonna be drinking no tequila. Because I tell you, when we won't get going, you know there's only one drink that gets us moving. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Louder, coach.
I'm going to interview Eric Weihenmayer, who climbed the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest. But he's gay.
PK. Higher. Not that high. Stay in sync. 1, 2, 3. Thrust it. Come on, thrust it. Bob. Okay.
That's enough. Thank you, ladies.
Good job.
Gay, work with honor turns. I'm worried about her balance.
Right. How long do you think it'll be before I can do the show?
You're starting tonight.
Tonight?
You'll be fine. How did she do?
She's no butterfly. Tony, she's all pelvic thrust. I mean, she prowls.
Change spot.
She's got it.
I wonder how she got it.
Well, she certainly didn't learn it.
She learned it all right, but they don't teach it in any class.
Minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of August in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday. My name is Rick Emerson, and if you're still feeling like at a two after that, then I cannot help you. Then you are beyond the reach of science and spirituality.
I feel much better.
Really, if the combined forces of Paul Stanley and Showgirls. And whoever that anchor woman is in Denver who called the blind guy gay, if that doesn't put a smile on your face and a spring in your step, Don Taylor, then you are beyond salvation on this day.
Plus, I just realized that we've got a refrigerator full of beer in here.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no excuse for... And I would imagine you're full of any number of prescription drugs at any given moment, so...
I don't have to just drink Vizo. I could go crack open a beer right now.
Yes, you could. You are, as my mother would say, you are free white and 21. The world is your oyster.
I'm not working for the man.
No. No, you are the man.
I am the man.
That's what I'm
saying. I could drink at work if I wanted to. It just feels wrong, but I could still do it.
You know, here's the thing. It actually was wrong at CBS, and we did it anyway. So, you know, it's those rules are not really quite as good for you. Well done.
Get the beer.
I wish everybody could just see the blessed determination with which you stumped on over to the refrigerator just now. Here's the thing. One of life's truths is this. It's hard to really do a determined walk when you limp. When you're all caned up, it's hard to really stride with any sort of like serious and fixed motivation when one of your legs is all gimpy. But, I mean, what the hell is that?
So we share an office. We share a studio with Greg Nibbler and Sarah Dillon.
Yeah.
Rampant, crazy drinkers all the time. We've got a refrigerator here that they had installed so they could keep beer cold.
Right.
The only thing that is in that fridge right now is a bottle of homemade Kahlua.
Here's the thing. There's a connection between the first statement and the third statement. The refrigerator is empty. That's the third statement. First statement, we share a studio with some rampant, crazy drinkers. See, so, and they, by the way, we should know that they actually taped early this morning. Greg and Sarah, it is now, we're taping this, it is 1:28 p.m. Pacific time. Greg and Sarah came in and did their show this morning. They were here at 9. They got done around 11, 11:15. So they had like hours of drinking time before I wasn't even awake, and they were probably drunk. So
I made the decision I was going to drink, and there was no beer.
You got a big bottle of Kahlua right there. It doesn't even look like Kahlua, though. It looks like cough syrup.
Yeah.
It does. It looks like a huge bottle of Robitussin
probably
or something.
Tastes like cough syrup.
You know, but what does it really matter to you? It's just an alcohol delivery system. It's a method. It's a method by which you are going to induce happiness into your body. All right. So Don Taylor is. Hold on. I'm trying to open it. Can you not open the bottle of homemade Kahlua? There we go. It's fantastic. Wow, that's nice and thick.
It is.
It's like you're. It's like 40-weight motor oil or something.
All right.
Jesus. Oh, I was going to ask how you knew it was homemade Kahlua, and actually just says Kahlua on the front.
There's a sticker on the bottle that says Kahlua.
All right, awesome. And it's from 2008. Drink up.
I'm sniffing it first because I never drink anything without knowing what it is.
No, you want to savor the bouquet. Yeah.
Syrupy.
Yeah. No, it looks like it's gone rancid, but in a sort of, but in kind of a delightful way.
It's actually quite tasty.
Yeah. Keep drinking. I'm sure it'll get better. Mm. All right, fantastic. Where'd you get the shot glass from?
It was just sitting over here. It's a Fun Employment Radio
shot
glass.
Hold on a second. Let's just back up. So you, as you were sniffing the Kahlua, you were smelling the bottle of Kahlua first before you drank it, because you don't drink anything without smelling it, because you don't want to put anything improper or dangerous in your body. And you just picked up a shot glass off the table that, I swear to Christ, that shot glass was next to their stripper clock and like the talking Dennis Miller doll. And was just sitting there when you came in today, following the program, on which they had God knows who in the studio as a guest, probably also drinking. Well, whatever. Yeah. It's too late now. Yeah. I wouldn't dwell on it. I've already
put it on my mouth. It's too late.
Oh, if I had a nickel for... well, in any event. It's 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's cavalcade of merriment. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. And Dawn Taylor is also getting your email. It's dawn@rickemerson.com. dawn@rickemerson.com. That is how she can be reached. Let's see what else. The chat box is also open. You go to rickemerson.com. There's a little thing called live chat. Click on that, and then that magically happens somehow. I don't really know how. I'm not really sure the mechanism by which it functions. Is that good? It doesn't even... You're cringing. You're sort of wincing.
It's very thick and very sweet. Yeah. I mean, it actually tastes good, but I wish I had some, like, club soda to cut it with, or go with the... Or maybe I'll go steal someone's milk out of the fridge or something. It's just, anyway.
Now, see, I'm almost tempted to try it just to see. But one of us has to remain sober and responsible.
Well, if you just taste it, it's not going to, like, knock you on your ass.
It's like
or
an after-school special or something. He goes, no, just try it. No, just to see what it tastes like. You can stop anytime you want. And then he's just going to cut the meat just covered in my own feces.
It's liquid sugar, coffee, and booze.
Yeah, that's exactly why I'm not going to try that, because it seems like a whole lot of things that I would like. By the way, I should say, we sometimes, and by we I mean specifically you and I, admit every single iteration of this program, when you were filling in for Tim Riley at the end of 2008, beginning in 2009, even then, sort of, we were clearly on this path. Like, the die was sort of cast. The mold was sort of set at that time, because you would come onto the show, and we would get about, I don't know, 25 minutes in just some long, flowery discussion of drugs and prescription and medications. And Sarah would eventually just say, quit talking about pills. And she would make us go to a break. So it's not, like, really surprising that, A, we would end up doing the show together, and, B, that consumes a lot of our discussion time now. But we do occasionally get someone who will weigh in and ask if one or more of us has a problem. And if at some point, I get a guy, this guy Mark, and he's like, I keep waiting to, keep expecting him to turn on the radio and one of you guys will just be gone because you'll be at the Hazeldell rehab facility. Anybody who thinks that is the case, well, we happen to know that actually 3 days ago we were sitting in the kitchen after the show, and Dawn... Actually, I swear to God, out of your purse, you pulled a huge bottle of Vicodin because you.
After I said, "Do you want to see what a gigantic bottle of Vicodin looks like?"
And I said, "Yes, yes, I do." But you pulled because you just gone to the pharmacy. Is that the deal?
Yeah.
And so you had just gotten your prescription for Vicodin. Hey, let me ask you this: How is it though? Are you just like, because you got the bum leg and whatnot?
Yeah.
And that's what that's for. Are you just like in pain all the time?
Not anymore. Because I'm always on Vicodin.
I was going to say, because why wouldn't you be taking the Vicodin all the time if you were in pain all the time?
I was in pain all of the time back when both my hips were screwed up. And then I had one fixed hip fixed. Then I had the other hip fixed. And because of that, I had this ongoing prescription for Vicodin. And now it's like, I'm not in a huge amount of pain all the time. I'm in a little bit of pain sometimes. You know, more than your average person who doesn't have a bum leg. But I'm not in just a huge amount of pain all the time. Mostly it's just, I'll be honest, once you've got a doctor who's willing to give you, like, you know, a month's supply of Valium, of Vicodin every single month, you don't, like, turn that down.
No, you just...
You don't stop doing that.
Because one never knows.
Yeah.
That's fortifying against a future problem.
There have been many times in my life where I've said, God damn, I wish I could have some Vicodin right now, and none was available to me.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that, you know, there's starving children in Asia thing. It's like, as long as it is available. Plus, I have a good prescription plan with my husband's insurance right now. So my giant bottle of Vicodin cost me like $7.
No, here's the... Really?
Yes.
No, but see, but this is all... just before I start rhapsodizing about that, let me just say this is all by way of noting that when you took out, you said, do you want to see what a giant bottle of Vicodin looks like? And I said, yes, yes, I do, more than anything. And you took it, and at no point, this is, I actually made this observation, this is how I know that I do not have any kind of a drug problem, because... Which I suppose maybe just me saying that is indication number one that no one will believe me. With, you know, because at no point did I say, well, you know, I've had this headache all day. It's like I looked at it, and then you put it back away, and then you went home with it. And at no point did I didn't fabricate like a tapeworm, you know, or a cancer or something.
I have many friends whose response to seeing the giant bottle of Vicodin would have immediately just been, can I have some?
Yeah. No,
see, and you did not say that.
Rick Emerson didn't say that. That's not what I do. You know, friends don't ask. You don't ask a friend for Vicodin. You wait for a friend to offer some Vicodin, and they say, well, I mean...
I was going to offer... I actually offered you some once before, and you turned it down.
That's not true. Did you?
I'm pretty sure I did.
When did you offer me Vicodin?
This may have been before we started working together every day, so maybe you were being polite. You didn't want to seem needy.
Well, I'm just saying. It seems... It's not a thing that I would... it's not a thing I would ever ask for.
If you ever need the opiates, I can hook you up.
Now, see, that's... I appreciate the offer, but that would just feel weird. It would just feel strange. It would just feel like it would just I don't know. I would feel like then it would feel like then we were going to end up like what's it
like William Burroughs and his wife. You're going to be shooting an arrow off my head.
I wasn't even going to say that. I was going to say we were going to end up like Juliana Margulies and what's his name, Christopher Moltisanti on The Sopranos. It was just cut to us like emaciated and frail, like limping around an apartment in a year and a half or something. You know,
well, like both Jeremy Irons characters in Dead Ringers?
Dead Ringers. Yeah, no. Well, all right. Moving on from evil twin gynecologists. We have a Taser Watch coming up today. Cannibal Watch on the way today. And we will have Don Taylor's Top 5. See, here's the thing. You will have absolutely no excuse to be in a bad or off-kilter mood later on because you will have done your Top 5 show tunes.
Wait, yes.
Hold on. I haven't even looked at the list. I'm putting the list face down right now because I don't even know what they are. I want to be a total surprise. So right here. Don Taylor's Top 5 Songs from a Musical.
I did do a run sheet. It's on the printer there if you want to use it as a rough general guideline. Because we certainly, our first hour of programming today was...
That was fantastic.
All over the place.
That was not at all. Here's the thing. We do Legion of News every day from noon to 1, and then we come on and we do this show from 1 to 3-ish. And that's the thing, is the Legion of News today... I know you feel like it was all over the place, but that's one of those things where if you were to go back and listen to it, which clearly you won't, but if you were to go back and listen to it top to bottom, I'm not saying it was like the best show ever, not the worst show ever, not nearly as unstructured as you think it was. It was not nearly so defocused as you might imagine.
See, I have felt that way a couple of times when we've finished one of these shows and you've been in a funk and said, oh, it wasn't a good show. And I've been like, really? It wasn't that bad.
Well, I'm saying there's a difference between a show being, there's two different issues. The show can be either good or bad, and a show can be structured or it can be sort of wandery and a little freeform, but those are not always the... In other words, one doesn't really have anything to do with the other. You can have a good show that's structured and a bad show that's freeform, but you can also have a show where nothing goes as you planned, but it's still fantastic, or a show where you do everything in exactly the order that you had planned to do it, and yet the show is still just terrible.
Bruce Egler in the text box says, actually, Legion of News was quite good today.
See, that's what I'm saying. There you go. So, Don,
it could just be perception. Like I said, some of the days when you think the show has not been good, sometimes it's just perception.
And really, and so the lesson you should draw from all this, Don, is that your opinion is without value.
I'm learning that.
Really, your thoughts are of no merit here. Moving on, Don Taylor is working on the following stories on your Thursday.
Glenn Beck will hold a rally on the anniversary of King's I Had a Dream speech. A man is put in the hospital after an attack by a goat, and a vanished Oregon man's body is found in Southern California.
This isn't the this is not the Mount Hood guy. I guess that would not be here. That would not be Southern California.
No,
I was conflating a couple of things there because I think I was seeing something this morning. It was that guy that they went to pull off Mount Hood? I guess they were going to do it yesterday, or they're going to do it today, or this week, or something. But I think now they've added a second guy. There was some sort of while you're up there, can you also look for? They came up with some second guy that vanished up on Mount Hood last year, I guess. And so these schlubs who were having to climb all the way up the mountain to haul down some tool who went up there and apparently perished. Now they're being tasked with finding some other guy, like some supplemental body on Mount Hood. I'll see if I can dig that up for you. Let's see. Yeah, so Taser Watch on the way today. Cannibal Watch on the way today. Top 5 coming up. We have, speaking of supplemental things, I got this... I keep calling it a greatest songs ever, but it's really not, and I'm probably overselling it now. It's a thing I was going to play yesterday, and we didn't get a chance. We were running kind of late, and you had to go do Ham-Fisted Radio, which I did not hear, by the way. How was the cooking? Cooking for a-holes?
He was terrific. Guy? He was a lot of fun. It's always interesting the difference between how someone like reads on the page and how they are in real life.
Because yeah.
You read his website, Cooking for A-Holes, and he sounds like he's going to be some big macho, super masculine, kind of Brian Woody kind of a guy.
Right.
And you meet him, and he's just a very nice, normal-sized, pleasant, kind of a hipstery sort of fellow with little wireframe glasses. He's not at all aggressive or assertive or anything, but he does talk the way he writes. He just seems different on the page. He was very nice.
It's like when I meet Jim Goad is like that. Like, if everybody has ever read Jim Goad, if you've read a book with a terrible title, but it's an astoundingly great book. He's a Portland author. He wrote a book called The Redneck Manifesto. It's kind of the thing for which he is most known. He also wrote a very a provocative and I believe at one point actually banned series of zines called Answer Me that got him into a lot of trouble, in these parts about 15 years ago. But anyway, Jim Goad he's a very aggro guy, a very alpha guy. But then you meet him, and he's not like a tiny guy, but he's not the kind of guy that you associate with his figurative voice. His writing voice and his actual voice and his actual in-person presence, not nearly the same thing at all.
I love having worked in cooking. I love actual cooks,
right?
Actual chefs, because he's completely self-trained. He never worked in a restaurant. He's worked as a bartender, but he's never actually worked in a restaurant kitchen. But there's this thing about you have this image in your mind of what chefs will be like. And in reality, they're mostly like Anthony Bourdain. They're really type A and really profane and really like hands-on and nuts and bolts. And like talking to this guy going, so what have you been working on, lately that you're really into? I'm really into sauces right now. Like, man, I made this barbecue sauce the other day that was effing off the hook.
What is the difference between a chef and a cook? I know that sounds dumb, but I don't know.
There's not really any real difference. It's just words, really. People who work on lines are generally considered cooks. But again, it's generally comes down to the fanciness of the establishment,
so
whether
like,
they're considered a cook or a chef.
But if you're part of a team, you're more of a cook. And if you're sort of the guy who's leading the whole operation, that's almost... It's almost like a colonel thing in the South, where it's sort of just an honor... It's like almost like an honorary thing, depending on one's place in the hierarchy, maybe in that establishment, or the establishment's place in the hierarchy of restaurants.
Yeah, something like that. But it's more just a random use of terms. Like, even in a restaurant, like the restaurant I worked at, there was the executive chef, the sous chef, I was the pastry chef, but then the guy who worked on the line, who actually did the grill, and that's what, he was called the line cook, but he was also the banquet chef. So it's, the words are just kind of used however people see fit, really.
Blah, 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 blah.
Remind me to tell you about my dreams when we get a chance. I had a couple of really
odd
dreams.
Your dreams like what you want to be when you grow up? Like you're,
no.
You want to
no,
ride
like
a pretty pony?
Like actual strange... I've had a couple of strange dreams like twice in a row.
Okay.
One about the show. And I wanted to share them when we had a chance. But...
All right. Make a note to myself right now. Hold on a second.
I wrote it down, too.
All right.
Yes,
all right. By the way, before we do anything else, speaking of... I can actually... we'll get to the news here in just a moment. But just two things. One... I don't remember how this got started, but yesterday, I guess, we were running a little bit behind, and then you had to go do Ham-Fisted Radio. So we did not do this second kind of greatest songs ever. But so we'll get to that today, and sort of overselling it a little bit, or maybe positioning it incorrectly. It's a fascinating song. It's a fascinating song, and it ties into something that was in the news yesterday. So we'll do that here in just a bit, and you'll either like it or not, but that's more your issue than mine. That is thing number one. Thing the second is this. I want to thank listener Scott. You know, one of the best things about doing this show is that I am now free from the bonds of payola regulations. I could just be taking graft and payola and plugola like all day long.
That's true.
I don't believe the FCC has any sort of, I mean, I guess like criminal laws still apply to us here.
You play by your own rules. rules, sir.
I am the law.
You're like Ian McShane in Deadwood.
I'm the Judge Dredd of radio. Yes.
You're the swear engine of internet radio.
But you know, it's
only without the actual swearing part.
But you know, it's like the thing with the Kahlua. You know, right now I could just get blind drunk on homemade Kahlua and continue to do this broadcast if I want. Whereas at the, I guess technically I could have over the last 10 years. It's Sarah that could not have gotten drunk on the air.
I have trouble getting used to this, by the way, because like I do the show, the Ham-Fisted Radio Show, I do over on PDX FM, and I'm used to doing this. This is my job, so I don't. It doesn't occur to me to drink while I'm working, frankly. Right. I had a guest one day who came. Patrick Allen Coleman from the Mercury, and he came and he brought a bottle of Bushmills with him. So we sat and we drank whiskey while he did Ham-Fisted Radio, which was awesome. But like I was doing the show yesterday, and Kristen Bowie and Jay Mackin come in after us, after Fatboy Roberts and I, to do their show, Don't Panic Portland. And they walk in and they just like sit down on the kitchen counter. They just have this huge bottle of vodka. And they start pouring drinks. And then Kristen comes over, and we're going to swap chairs out. And she has a cup, and she says, oh, yeah, I was just going to drink vodka. But then I decided to drink vodka and Red Bull. And I go, and I grab it, and I go to take a sip of it. And as I'm putting it to my mouth, Kristen goes, it's mostly vodka. It was, like, just barely flavored with Red Bull, and I almost, like, choked. But it's, like, never occurs to me.
I would think that would go without saying.
To sit and just drink a big glass of vodka while I'm doing the show.
To be fair, it's not like this show has traditionally been prudish in that fashion. Just because I don't drink, it doesn't mean that everybody else associated with this program doesn't drink. When we were, I've mentioned this story. When we were at Entercom, we had a dorm fridge in the studio when we were working at Max 910, and it was just filled, and it wasn't even filled with beer. It was just hard liquor. And then we had another little, like a little cupboard next to it. And because we learned early on that if we just got guests a little liquored up, that they were much better. And that ended one day when somebody, and I think his name rhymed with Dennis Pitzenberger, left all of our booze all over the studio. And then I think it was shortly after that Tom Likas did his show live from our studio, and somebody on his show poured like half a bottle of red wine onto the floor by mistake. And I came in the following Monday, and there was a note in my mailbox saying to see Jack Hutcherson, who was the general manager at that time. And I walked in, and I guess he was not privy to the fact that we were often getting our booze on in there. And so I walked into the office, and he just had a huge bottle of vodka sitting on his desk. And he said, do you want to tell me about this? And I just said, and I didn't even try to explain it. I just said, I'm sorry, it won't happen again. And he said, that's what I thought. And I left. And that was the end of the conversation. So we didn't really do much drinking until we got back over to CBS. And then when we got to CBS, it all started when Scotty was on the show that day, and we did that whole fortified wine tasting where I bought the Boone's Farm and the Mad Dog and the Night Train and the Ripple and the Thunderbird, and I was mixing them together for him, and then he vomited all over the bathroom, and then he whizzed in Sarah's car. Was that out loud? Well, anyway. We'll have her on someday to tell the whole story. And Dawn just poured herself a second tumbler of Kahlua.
Shot glass. It's not a tumbler.
Whatever. So as we sort of get ready to get into the news segment here, I do want to say that speaking of guys who make a living doing what they know and doing what they love and the whatever, and being free from the bonds that previously prohibited me from discussing businesses that might have offered me services. Not so much a business as a guy. I want to thank our listener, Scott. Scott Landerville, who I think you have met. He's been part of the Rick Emerson bowling team, the Sleep Country USA Pajama Bowl.
Indeed.
He actually, I've had this business with my car not running for the last couple of days. And it's one of those things where I'm just such an idiot because I am that guy that my dad always made money on growing up, where he would just be like, don't be that guy that can't do it for himself and has to pay a guy like me. Be the guy who can do it himself. I am not that guy. I was ready to take it into the shop, and the guy would have gone like $700 an hour labor, plus parts, of course, and I would have been like, all right, whatever, here's my MX. I would have just handed the guy the plastic and just waited for him to charge me whatever it was he was going to charge me. So I got this Facebook message from Scott, and he's like, you know, I am a mechanic. I could take a look at that. And he was actually going to be in Portland anyway. He was here to see Morgan Grace, who was playing last night. And he's like, I could swing by and take a look at it. And, you know, and of course, I'm throwing out the whole, like, well, I don't even know why I'm doing this, because he's a mechanic, right? Like, he knows what he's talking about. He is, you know, that's what he does for a living by trade. And plus, he just knows stuff. And he knows that I don't know anything about cars, and yet it's like the male thing where I still feel compelled to go, all right, well, that'd be great. I mean, I'm thinking it's probably the solenoid. I don't even know what the solenoid is.
Well, of course, I already coached you to do that, yes. But I was talking about, like, a mechanic who would screw you, not someone who's your friend.
But it's just like a guy thing where you can't say, I don't know what it is at all. I am not a man. You know, I'm just feeling like some sort of trunk having John Merrick guy, you know, where it's just. I couldn't tell you. If you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you what a solenoid does. Don't bother to email me now because it doesn't really matter. I know what the alternator does. That's only because a guy explained it to me because I was using it wrong once. I don't know what the... I just know to name check the solenoid
as like a thing.
I assume you were
using the term, the word alternator wrong, not you weren't actually using an alternator wrong.
No. I mean, it's like I was... A guy told me what it did. So I could explain the function of that in a car, but it's like the... All I know about the solenoid is that's what went out in my 4Runner when I had that. Anyway, so... He listened to me and very patiently sort of smiled and said, "Well, all right." And then we met up and he looked at the car and it's like it was that thing where it's like I put the key in and I had barely he goes, "Well, just turn the key and see what happens." And I turned the key and like 51 millionths of a second after I turned the key, it went like and made a noise and he went, "Oh, yeah, it's a battery. Okay. Here's what we're going to do. Call, whoever and there's some store near there."
It was just your battery?
It was just the battery. Well, because but how would I have known that as contrasted with it being something else? See, you say that now with that tone like I ought, this judgmental inflection as though I should have known. How was I supposed to know it was the battery? There's no light on the dashboard that went on that said like your battery's dead. How would I have known that?
Well,
see?
There should have been a light that went on to tell you your battery's dead, but obviously, apparently it didn't.
If only you'd built my car.
I don't know. I didn't mean to make that. I'm sorry. I apologize for making the
eye roll. I'm just saying. See, you say that, and probably many people are going, "Well, if your battery, come on, that's obvious." Yeah, but it's like, how am I going to, like, I carry around like a battery testing thing in my pants? I mean, it's a.
I think it's as the chat boxes light up with people explaining why you should know it was your battery.
Whatever.
I think it's because I've had to replace batteries so many times myself in cars, and I've done it myself, and so it just seems like. I don't know your car, though, so it might not have been as obvious.
And I feel less dumb now about not actually getting to the... Because I told you I was walking around in Trader Joe's looking up jumper cables on my BlackBerry, and where it kept saying, like, "And it'll melt your eyes if it explodes." I felt dumb about not actually ever trying to jump the car. But in retrospect, I don't, because it turns out that wouldn't have done any good, because the battery itself had just conked out.
Did you try to get anybody to jump it for you?
Were you here 5 seconds ago?
Did you just leave it? I mean, I've heard the story. Did you just leave it sitting there?
Because we were running late. We had a place to be. And then It's like, and then, and every single, not that anybody cares about this, but, we do this show, I'm basically here from like 11 something to, to like 4. But every morning and every afternoon, I have had appointments that I could not move. I mean, and Laura's out of town. So there's been no. I've had to do some of these appointments myself. She's not here, and it's like there's just there's been no time to get it done. So I felt like a tool for not trying to jump it. But it turns out that wouldn't have done any good though, because the battery was just a dead battery. It was gone. The battery had it is no longer a workable battery. So we go to the place and pick up a battery, and here's how much of a man he is, and how much of an emasculated nerd I am. So Scott is there, by the goodness of his heart, he's decided to help me out and to diagnose the car and then to put the battery in. And so we go to the store, we drive there, we pick up the battery, we come back, and he opens his truck, and he's like all the great mechanic guys. The floor of his truck is just like littered with like wires and cables and like screwdriving things and whatever. And he says, "Well, crap." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "Well, I set my toolbox out, and then I just left it on the floor of my garage. I was loading my truck to come out here today because I didn't bring my toolbox with me tonight." And so I'm already thinking, okay, so I guess I'll just take Lara's car again on Thursday, and then I'll go to the airport, and then maybe we'll. And then meanwhile, though, he's like rummaging around, like in the little storage area behind your seats, where you keep like a flashlight and like flares, and he's basically finding like a coat hanger. And like a set of jeweler's screwdrivers and like a rusty nail. And he said, "Okay, this is enough to fix the battery, no problem." And the next thing I know, he's like underneath the hood, like taking out the old battery and installing the new one with just like crap he found on the floor of his truck. And then he fires it up, and then he gives me some helpful advice about returning the battery and getting a refund of like $9 or something. Anyway, so I want to thank Scott again. He's the coolest guy, just for helping me out with that. And I'm just in awe of people. Here's the thing about somebody who knows mechanical stuff. You know what it's like? It's like meeting somebody who knows how to draw. You know, somebody that can, you know, they can see a person and they can draw a picture of them. Or they can just, you know, whatever. It's something dumb. I can draw a picture of a pony. You know what? I can draw, like, stick people and that's about it. But, you know, if you ever meet anybody who has the ability to draw or to create a, you know, to create any sort of a, you know, graphic representation like that, all of them think it's no big deal. If you ever meet somebody that can really paint well and you go, that's a fantastic drawing. And he goes, oh, it's just something I did, you know, last night. And you're like, are you dick? I couldn't do that if my life depended on it. So I am always impressed by people who can do stuff like that. The guys who can take clock radios apart and who were probably doing it when they were five. Every radio engineer I've ever known who just took a toaster oven apart and put it back together at the age of seven, like for no reason, just to see what made it work. And thank you to Scott. And it's not even like my masculinity is in question now. It's just been proven to be non-existent. It's just not there at all.
You're a big girl.
In any way, I really am. I'm just a woman. I'm just a cotillion bound schoolgirl. That's really it. All right, how are you feeling after your second glass of Kahlua, Don?
I'm feeling a lot better. Thank you. Thank you for asking.
I really only have one question for you, Don.
Yes.
I want to know if we got any people here tonight that I can get high.
Don.
Yeah, it would be me.
All right, it's Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now. From the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
San Bernardino County authorities are seeking the public's help as they investigate the death of a former Oregon corrections officer whose body was found in a desert grave more than 3 years after he disappeared. A motorist found the grave last December 29th, about 45 miles west of Needles, a small town near the Arizona border. The body was exhumed, and coroner's officials recently identified him as 47-year-old Ronald Guy of Portland. Guy, a former Oregon corrections officer who later became a nightclub manager, was reported missing in March 2005.
Needles. And Needles is in, did you say that's
California.
In California, or it's in, I thought it was one of those overlapping cities like...
I don't think, it's near the border in Arizona. It's one of those small, very, very hot desert towns.
Here's two things about Needles. Can you name for me now a pop culture reference using Needles, California?
No, I can't.
I can give you two.
Okay.
All right. One, that's where Sam Kinison died. Two, that is where Snoopy's cousin
that's
Spike
right.
lives. Snoopy's emaciated cousin Spike lives in Needles, California. Bam!
Wow.
That's what I do. Some guys fix cars. I do that. Gah!
Well, sheriff's investigators said Guy had no known acquaintances in the area, so they don't know why he was buried in a shallow grave in Needles.
Now, I'm sure it was nothing untoward.
Glenn Beck's rally on the anniversary and at the site of Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous I Have a Dream speech is drawing criticism, protests, and questions about his intentions.
Really? Are there questions about his intentions?
Beck insists the event Saturday at the Lincoln Memorial is not about politics, even though Beck and former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin will attend.
Well, here's the thing. The questions about the intentions, the phrasing it that way sort of implies that you're looking for an answer. That someone who is, quote, questioning, end quote, what Glenn Beck is going to be doing there really is, they're not sure. You know, they want to know the answer to that, and they're hoping that he'll provide them with some sort of resolution.
You're not trying to stir things up, are you, sir?
And
says Glenn Beck.
The irony in this story, of course, is that it's not about politics, at least not for Glenn Beck. It probably is for Sarah Palin. For Glenn Beck, it's just like, you know, it's just like, how many zeros can I put on the end of my tax statement this year? And the answer is, did you know? You know what's funny? I was just thinking about Glenn Beck last night, actually. My brain does weird things as I drift off to sleep every night. As my brain sort of spins down for the evening like a hard drive that you've turned off, I get the weirdest, most random things that occur to me. And I was thinking about Glenn Beck. And not only was I thinking about Glenn Beck as I drifted off into a night of slumber in the arms of Morpheus, I was thinking about Glenn Beck and that Christmas book he wrote, which is called The Christmas Sweater. And I don't know what The Christmas Sweater is about. I have no idea what the plot is. All I know is that he wrote The Christmas Sweater, and then there's a one-man stage show of it, too, which... And on the cover, it's like he's sort of wearing the sweater and he's like hugging himself and smiling. And it just looks like the most treacly thing ever made. But... in any event. So there you go. Glenn Beck. And so he's going to be doing what? He's at the Martin Luther King thing and he's speaking.
He's having a rally at the Lincoln Memorial on the anniversary of King's.
But a rally for what?
I don't know. It's probably tea party crap. It's interesting, though, because he has said that he's telling people it's merely a coincidence that it's taking place on the 47th anniversary of King's plea for racial equality.
Well done.
Says Glenn Beck, who has called Barack Obama a racist. The event's website says the Restoring Honor rally is to pay tribute to America's military personnel and others who embody our nation's founding principles of integrity, truth, and honor.
You know, here's the thing about it, as much of a hack as he is, and he really is, my whole thing about Glenn Beck is not even, this is well covered territory with me, that it's not like I find anything he does. I am constitutionally incapable of being offended, I think, by anybody like Glenn Beck, because I don't care. And because he's just a big bloviator. I'm just sort of offended by him the same way I'm offended by Sean Hannity, that it's just sort of clumsily done. It's a little ham-handed. But the great thing about this, and the reason why stories like this make me smile, is because you can just – you wonder if he just keeps waiting for people to sort of realize what's going on, and that every day is like a gleeful realization that they haven't figured it out. I mean, here's the thing. Confidential to all all of America, to every liberal everywhere, he is working you like a puppet under the table. All right? You just have no idea.
Well, he's not even subtle about it with
the
crying and the ridiculous things he says.
It's just fantastic. I mean, it is like capitalism at its finest. And that he just has this, it's just a coincidence. And then it's just to create this apoplectic rage. And meanwhile, you know that there's an accountant somewhere just rubbing his hands together with maniacal glee. Let's also have no illusions about something. If I could think of stuff like this to do, I'd be doing it. The only reason that this show doesn't do things of this nature is because I'm just not imaginative enough. We can never think of stunts like this.
You know, once we start sending our fruit baskets to people who shoot guys.
Yeah,
we might whip up some of that anger and controversy.
I'm thinking, I'm thinking that's the thing. That might be our entree into this world. It's not like I'm above kooky radio stunts. Clearly, I am not. It's just that I'm not bright enough to think of them.
Well, about his Restoring Honor rally, Beck says, this is going to be an iconic event. This is going to be a moment that you'll never be able to paint people as haters, racists, none of it. This is a moment, quite honestly, that I think we reclaim the civil rights movement. It has been so distorted and so turned upside down, it is an abomination.
That's wonderful. I wonder if he'll cry there, too.
Glenn Beck is taking back the civil rights movement.
See, and it's like – and that's the thing. It's like it's so fundamentally retarded. How could anybody be offended by it? I mean, it's just that there's no – it just boggles my imagination. But, whatever. Do you remember the thing that Rush Limbaugh did I guess it would have been like maybe 93, 94. Do you remember Rush Limbaugh's bake sale? I don't know if you were ever a Rush Limbaugh listener.
I avoided him as much as I could.
I
admire him from afar, but I just found the things he was saying so irritating that I just couldn't listen to him. I admire his showmanship and his ability as a broadcaster, but it's like, I know my feeling about the whole deliberately divisive, angry white man thing.
You avoid him the same way you avoid Eminem?
Yeah. All right. I avoid him the same way Eminem and Lars and Hannity
and all of those guys.
Not Lars Ulrich, Lars Larson.
I really avoid Lars Ulrich at this point far more than I. I'll put it this way: I've actively listened to Lars Larson in the last 2 years. What was my point? So it really when Rush Limbaugh in like I would say like 92, 93, 94 through about maybe I guess through like 97, 98. That was really when he was like at his apex. He was at his peak, like in the early to mid 90s. He was just really the absolute best in the world at what he does. And he had one of the best radio stunts ever. I mean, it's like the gold standard. And people who've listened to me for a long time have heard, this shouldn't come as a shock to anybody that in many, if not most ways, I mean, Rush really is like the gold standard against whom I measure myself. And by the way, that's just a way to make sure that I always feel like a colossal failure. So, so if I start hitting you up for those Vicodin at some point in the near future, like it'd be a huge shock or anything. But he had this great thing because he back in the pre-internet days, he had this thing called the Limbaugh Letter, which I'm sure he still does. And the Limbaugh Letter was just the same thing a lot of guys do. It's like a newsletter he would send out. And it was like a once a month thing. And it was just, he would send out like a, you know, it was like a 5 or 6 page glossy newsletter that was like his musings on things and letters to Rush and, you know, whatever. And, you know, and then the back page was all just a bunch of gewgaws that you could buy. He was just trying to sell you a bunch of crap with his face on it. But the Limbaugh letter cost like, I don't know, it cost like $35 a year or something to subscribe to Rush Limbaugh's newsletter. And this guy named Dan called up from, God, like Boulder City, Colorado or someplace. But this guy, Dan, called Rush Limbaugh and said, Rush, I'd love to subscribe to your Limbaugh letter, but it's $35. And it was either that he couldn't afford it or that like his wife was a real liberal and wouldn't let him spend like the family's money on it. And this – so Rush did the greatest thing ever, which is they held a bake sale to raise money to buy Dan a subscription to the Limbaugh letter. And they held it like in his town. And there was something like – I don't know, like 15,000 people ended up coming to this bake sale in the guy's hometown, including Rush, who came in and landed in the middle of the event like in a sort of Air Force Two-style helicopter. Like one of those massive like Black Hawk Down helicopters landed in the center of the field, and Rush stepped out, you know, like a returning emperor. And they had a bake sale, I swear to Christ, of 15,000 people to raise the $35 so this guy could subscribe to the newsletter. That's, and it's like one of the best things ever.
Wonderful.
And so now everybody else just sort of does hollow replications of that, which is what the Glenn Beck is doing. So also, he's just a big sweaty bastard. And the thing is, people's sweat on television make me a little uneasy.
Yeah.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
I actually wanted to read an email we received.
All right.
If I could take a moment. If we have some good email reading music.
Yeah, I think we do. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can I can find something like that. Let's see. How about we'll do this. Let's see if I can get this to open here. Email reading music. I think I have right. I'm just waiting for this to open. This is on our I'll play something off our Legion of News soundboard. That's where I've put all the tellingly, that's where I put all the happy sounds. They're all there. Just give me 1 second here. Ba-bum-bum-ba-bum-bum-bum.
Well, it's kind of a naggy right, letter, so if you have naggy music. Oh, this will work.
Oh, wait, no, I'm naggy. All right.
Oh, yeah. This is from listener Rick, okay, who writes, Dawn, I am appealing to you as a fellow movie buff. About the time of the KUFO firing fiasco, I sent Rick a copy of the James Whale classic Bride of Frankenstein as a reverse birthday gift.
Oh, yeah.
They were fired on my birthday, October 23. You can guess what happened next. Rick promised to watch said DVD and reply as to his opinion thereof, having said numerous times that it was one of the only Universal Monster classics he had somehow never seen. But he never got back to me. Yes, I know. Having listened since the debut on Portland Radio those many years ago, I know that Rick is not the most reliable fellow when it comes to email responses. Nevertheless, I'd like to know if my money was well spent. Did he or did he not watch and or like the movie? If not, a pox on his house forever. Just kidding. Well, maybe. Great show. So glad you guys are back. Rick. P.S. F. Matt with a copy of Bride of Frankenstein.
There you go. It's funny, you got about 4 words into that, and I just immediately knew who it was from. So this is an ongoing conversation that this guy and I had, and I forget how Bride of Frankenstein even came up. I think Aaron was counting down. I think Aaron did a whole thing. Aaron Duran did a top 5 on the show at one point about sequels that were better than the original. And he said, I think Aaron singled out Bride of Frankenstein. And if I'm getting the story wrong, let's all agree now just to pretend that this is correct so we don't have to have like a second branch of this, like an ancillary, you know, like section of this conversation that is, you know, some sort of like, you know, a corrective arterial to this. Anyway, so I think Aaron said Bride of Frankenstein he thought was better than the original, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, I've actually never seen that. That's one of the only, you know, blah, blah, blah that I haven't seen. And so then I got Rick sent me just a long email. I can't believe what I'm hearing. And I just said, well, you know, it's not like I avoided it. It's just like I somehow missed it. And then it's just, it doesn't ever seem to be on TV. It's not like a lot of those movies are just constantly running. And then I got in the mail from him a copy of Bride of Frankenstein. And then immediately they fired us. And he sent me a sort of, you know, with the trademark gallows humor that is associated with the Rick Emerson show. He said, well, now you'll have time to watch it. You know, look forward to your triumphant return, whatever. And then I took it home and... Here's the thing, is this sounds like a dumb explanation, you know, because of its simplicity, but it also is believable, and it's also true, which is this, that the reason I have not yet watched Bride of Frankenstein, I don't mean to sound ungrateful, I'm really not, is that literally, it sounds so, literally there's just a piece of paper sitting on it at home, and so I keep forgetting it's there. And if something is not, this is why we have the run sheets on this program. Mm. And this is why we've been on the air now for almost an hour. And we haven't, you know, we've gotten to maybe 3% of the things we're supposed to. Because if it's not right in front of me, I forget all about it. Doesn't matter who it is. And that's not just things or stuff I'm supposed to do. That's like, you know, family members, you know, staying in touch with friends or loved ones. Doesn't matter. If it's not directly in front of me, it'll not get done. So I took it home, and then I was, you know, taking home some other, bringing home some other stuff to the office. And I had like a manila file folder. And I just set it on top of the DVD, and okay, I'll get back and I'll sort that stuff later. But it's like, but the manila file folder is the largest thing in the stack, and it's on top. So I can't see anything underneath it. So therefore, by dint of that, the things underneath it don't exist. So there you go. So really what I need to do is I need to take it and I need to set it on top of my DVD player or just set it, you know, somewhere where I put it inside my shoe or something, which is, by the way, what I do with things at night. If I need to remember to take something with me in the morning, I will fill my shoes like a Hans Christian Andersen story. I will fill my shoes full of whatever it is I need to take the next day. So I got to find some way to put that in place. What I need to do is actually just take the DVD and stick it inside my laptop so that then every time I boot up my laptop, it's right there and it announces itself.
Well, you know, I had that thing where I was on your show and I mentioned that I had never seen Schindler's List.
That's right.
And then I wrote a piece about it for Cinematical and I got all this hate mail. And then my birthday came along. I had a birthday party. Siegfried showed up, gave me a copy of Schindler's List as a birthday gift. Hilarious. I still haven't watched it.
Happy birthday. It's the Holocaust.
It will have been 2 years ago next month.
Really?
In September, yes. And it's still unopened. And I see it and I go, oh, I got to watch that.
Well,
and it just seems like work.
Well, here's the thing. It's like I don't it doesn't matter to me that you haven't watched Schindler's List because, I don't know. I guess just because I realize that it's a big buzzkill of a film or whatever.
Well, I did watch Titanic.
And I was
going to
say,
you
watched Titanic. So that's the thing. It's like you watch Titanic. I'm good. It doesn't matter. Like I figure that everybody with people, you get like one thing. You get to lean on them until they watch or read or try or buy or whatever. And then if you ask for more than that, then you're just like a nagging dick about it. So you watch Titanic, and so I don't feel like I can ever again give you an ultimatum of like you must watch this or I will shun you forever. That's why like when I mentioned the book Youth and Revolt, I'm like, yeah, read it, don't read it, you know, whatever. It's like I can't really just like press you about it because you've already done like I've used up my one thing on Titanic, and I'm glad I did that because it's a fine film and whatever. So. It is perfectly Siegfried, by the way, that he would show up with Schindler's List as a birthday gift. That is just exactly the kind of thing that guy does.
It was ideal. It was perfect.
Well done. This is all true.
We should do an ad of a spot.
I was just about to say, actually. Yeah. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson program is brought to you by folks including The Cleaning Solution and the person of Michael Beatty, 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. That is the contact information for The Cleaning Solution, and we will talk more about them later on in this hour. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Okay.
Yes? Put your thumb over your shoulder there.
Well, we had talked about perhaps we were having a guest today.
Do you listen to anything that I say?
No. Well, you said he didn't confirm, but
yeah.
I said we never heard.
Yeah, there was just nothing.
We never checked to see if he maybe just showed up and was sitting out there, though.
I think we would have been told about that at some point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we would have knocked or something.
Yeah.
I'll read a news story now.
You still feeling like at a six? Maybe you need more Kahlua. Maybe you're running low.
Here,
yes.
Hold on.
Just a long story short on this is that – awesome. Is that last week we had scheduled Mr. Joseph Rose, who is the Oregonian traffic reporter, and he was going to be on the show. And then he just sort of never appeared. And we were like, well, what is up with that? He sent a very apologetic email saying, I put it in my iPhone calendar. And he said, I put it for the wrong day, Friday instead of Thursday. Can we reschedule? And we said, sure, we'll reschedule. We rescheduled, I believe, for today. While it is possible that he's sitting in the kitchen right now, I don't believe that is the case. I think Cheryl would have made us aware of that. She usually sends me a message on Skype. But she attempted to confirm that with him today, and he could not be found or located anywhere. So I'm guessing that's not the case. Here is Dawn Taylor.
The charges against Robert Blagojevich are gone. The prosecution on Thursday dismissed the charges against the brother of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. Robert's lawyer, Michael Ettinger, says he's not sure there will be.
Wait a minute. So this is a second Blagojevich. There's more than one. So this
there's
is
more
Robert,
than one.
Not Rod. There's a whole nest of them somewhere.
Yes.
Jesus.
Well, his lawyer says he's sure there will be some celebrating at his client's home this evening.
His favorite drink, single malt scotch. So I'm sure there's some liquor stores going to get cleaned out.
I love Chicago, where they just sort of, you know, there's no sense of pretending one is not what one clearly is in that town. You just go right into it.
Do we know what it is he did?
I would imagine just being related to Rod Blagojevich is probably enough at this point to get you indicted.
I saw Blagojevich, and I assumed it was...
I'm guessing that it's some sort of thing related to, you know, that it's like obstruction of justice or, you know, destruction of evidence or perjury. Or I'm not saying he was accused of those things. That would just be my guess based on the last name.
Well, according to the intranets, Robert Blagojevich is a Tennessee businessman who moved to Chicago in 2008 to handle fundraising for his brother. And he was charged with four criminal counts, including attempted extortion and bribery conspiracy.
There you go. So, yeah, not too far off.
His attorney explains what the prosecution told the judge as to why they were dropping the four counts against his client.
What they told Judge Zagel was, due to the disparity in the roles of
I love
Robert
this guy.
And Rod, and in the interests of justice, we are dismissing the charges against Robert.
I love this guy. This is if I ever need a criminal lawyer, this is exactly the guy I'm going to get, because he sounds like a guy who can just get things done. He sounds like a guy who can handle something and who can perhaps
And if need be, he would just punch you in the face.
I was going to say that, or perhaps you know, witnesses who are scheduled to testify against you might not make it to their court date. he sounds like a man who knows people. Do you watch Breaking Bad?
No, I don't.
Boy, you know, let me just tell you this, because Bob Odenkirk is on that show, and he plays a lawyer, and a lawyer not unlike this guy, I think. That's just my opinion, by the way, counselor. It's constitutionally protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. But Bob Odenkirk plays this lawyer who operates a little bit fast and loose in terms of the rules and laws that govern our society, and it's just the greatest show. I mean, it's just, and that's the thing that people, especially Seamus, speaking of being nagged to do things, and like The Bride of Frankenstein thing, Seamus nagged me for like 18 months to start that show, and he would send me like an email a week: Breaking Bad, Breaking Bad, Breaking Bad. Why aren't you watching Breaking Bad? Watch it. And he kept saying, he's like, it's on AMC. I mean, it's the network of Mad Men and Walking Dead and whatever. And he's like, you got it. And finally, I was like, fine. And I started it. And it's so good, but it was just so depressing that I, you know, so dark and grim. And it took me forever. But, you know, it took me maybe 3 months to watch the first five or six episodes because it was so dark. But then I hit some line of demarcation. I hit some event horizon there, where suddenly the switch flipped, and it was like either the show had just fundamentally darkened me as a person, or I just, I don't know, I adjusted myself around it. So anyway, I'm just at the point where I'm staying up until 3 a.m, like every night, just trying to get caught up, like you were doing with whatever police procedural it was you were watching.
The Shield.
A couple of weekends ago. Yeah, The Shield. I mean, it's just the greatest show, but it's worth it. I mean, even if the show was not exceptional in like every single other way, which it is, even if the rest of the show was bad, which it certainly is not, it's like the furthest thing from bad. Bob Odenkirk as the corrupt lawyer is like worth your price of admission alone. I mean, he's awesome.
I love
awesome.
Him so much.
Well, it's that thing where he goes right up to the line of making it too funny, of making it ring false. I mean, he takes it as close to the edge of flat-out comedy as he possibly can while still keeping it believable. I mean, it's just a masterful job of acting. For anybody that has only ever, you know, they've just seen his kind of more straight-ahead sort of sketchy stuff, it really is just, it's genius. It really, it's fantastic.
We have one more soundbite from the lawyer. He says his client was ecstatic when he heard he wouldn't have to go through another trial.
Oh, my God. Basically screaming, and then I could hear Julie in the background hysterical crying.
That sounds like a soundbite we could repurpose into any number of things. Not unlike
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
Awesome. All right, we'll do this. We'll come back on the other side. And we got more to come, including Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical. Isn't that true, Don Taylor?
Mm-hmm.
Are you excited about it?
I am excited.
Are you really?
I am.
Are you this excited?
Just about.
All right, fantastic. What else do we have? Taser Watch coming up. Cannibal Watch coming up. And we'll play a song that's a little bit interesting later on that you will either enjoy or not.
We can do anything, really.
Yes, we could. We could do a commercial right now if we wanted to.
We could go for hours today if we felt like it.
Here's why we can't, because I got to go to the airport later and pick up Lara. She's on her way back from Vegas. where I believe she cleaned up at the craps table last night. Because you know why? Because, and speaking of cleaning up, we'll talk about Michael Beatty in a second. But first, I just got to say this. So she was there to give a presentation to some colleagues and supervisors and whatever. It was like a, you know, sort of an industry thing. Industry convention at the Venetian, by the way, where, you know, I'm just saying, some industries are different than other industries. You know, it's like in radio, you know, like they have the national, like the NAB convention or whatever every year. And it's always just, it's just a bunch of skeezy guys, you know, walking around, you know, like clutching a plastic bag that's full of like cheap, you know, tchotchkes. Anyway, so her company, of course, they're at the Venetian, and, you know, and she's in, like, the largest room she's ever seen in her life or whatever, and it doesn't matter. So she was there to give a presentation on Wednesday morning and then another presentation Wednesday night. And so then once Wednesday night was done, though, she sent me a text. She's like, presentation's done. Lara finished. Drinking starting. Woo! You know? and then I got several, picture texts throughout the night. And, like, as the evening went on, they made less and less sense. One of them was just of a guy who looked like Gene Simmons standing on the strip next to a guy who looked like Liberace, and they were hugging. And there was, like, no caption. And then later on, there was another photo of a guy, and you just saw from the back. It was of some tourist having his picture taken with two sort of showgirls, you know, with the big feathers in their hair and the whatever. She was taking a picture of this guy as he was having his picture taken with these two girls, like, by his wife. His wife is taking a photo of him, and Lara's taking a photo of the whole scene. Sort of a tableau sort of thing. And then the third picture was just, like, of the carpet. here you go. And it was just, like, a picture of, like, literally just, like, the rug. Like, here's some decorative red and gold swatching from the floor of the Venetian. You know, have a good night. So I think by that point she was, she'd been at the tables and wherever else. I was going to say the bar, but it's like the table and the bar are the same thing. Yeah. That's one of the great, really insidious things about Vegas. As long as you're gambling, they'll just keep bringing you booze. It sort of just becomes like, it just becomes this sort of descent through all nine circles of Dante's world and then back out the other side at the end. But I believe she is coming home actually in the black, so that's good. In any event. Let's talk about the cleaning solution in the person of Michael Beatty. The number for that is 971-533-3211. And I mentioned, I think, yesterday that Aaron Duran had sent me this emergency text where he was like, OMG, we're going to be filming this commercial at Things from Another World. We got to clean the car, but it's filled with filth. How do I contact the cleaning solution? And that is sometimes the way it happens. And it's always like as you're getting ready to have like, your friends come over, you know, or somebody from work, or if you're... Look, you guys know what I'm talking about here, where you have, you know, maybe you're newly single, or maybe not even newly single. Maybe you've been single for a long time, but you're just a slob. And you try to go to her place, which is really how you ought to play that most of the time. But sometimes it's like the chick just insists on coming to your house or your apartment or whatever, and there's just no getting around that. And then you're doing what I used to do, which is you're just going around and you're just taking all the piles of dirty dishes and putting them into the oven and shutting the door. And then you are just taking your endless piles of dirty clothes, and then those are just going into the freezer. And everything else just gets piled behind a bookcase or thrown underneath a tarp or something. But at some point, her feet are probably going to touch, you know, like the carpet. She's certainly going to see the carpet in your place. And if you just realize you got huge stains everywhere, that's not a place where a woman wants to disrobe, in a place that's just filled with stains and filth. You know what I mean? Can we just be honest? Can we call a spade here? If you just got... If your apartment is just looks like it's ridden with lice and dirt and fingernail clippings, chicks aren't going to get nude there. It's never going to happen. So, and you're probably lazy when it comes to these things too, because you know Y chromosome and so forth. So just write down this number. Just be motivated enough to do this at least. Write down 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. There you go. And then the next time you feel like your place has got to be viewable, the next time it's like it's got to be, fit for human company, call the cleaning solution, and Michael Beatty, come on over, and he'll get the whole joint clean. They do residential work, commercial work, and then they do maintenance work as well. So once it's clean, they can help keep it that way, so you don't have this disaster looming at some point in the future. 971-533-3211. And it's Michael Beatty. He is the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network. Stay there. We are back with more after this. Don't go anywhere.
out while you were on vacation. Covered all your shifts for your operation. But when you got back, you still wouldn't show me your brand new silicone boobs. So I took a walk around my neighborhood to get you off of my mind like I knew that I ought to. But when I saw a big black van run down a bird, I had to think about you. Story like a broken record, but still I ain't jealous of the fellas like you like anyway. So you took another guy on that Caribbean cruise while I stayed on the dried into my bottle of pills. But when you got back, you didn't even have yourself a tan, you're just staying in your room. So I fed your dog while you were out of town, and I'm alone when you wasn't around. But when you got back, you had the nerve to ask me if I had gone through some of your clothes. No, I'm not a quarterback, I'm not a fireman. Still, I can have any girl in Japan, because I'm a healthy 159-pound American boy. Yeah, yeah, you tell a story like a broken record, and you tell a story like a broken.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming along. It's 503-505-6964. How's that Kahlua treating you over there?
I'm done with the Kahlua. I was starting to feel a little queasy. I just realized something. I was checking, looking at Facebook.
Yeah.
And yesterday, I wished a happy anniversary to Paul Van Woudenberg and his wife. And I believe I said her name was Jennifer, and her name is Jessica.
Awkward.
So apparently I ruined their... Well, they haven't said anything, but...
But the implication is, and in fact, probably...
In my mind, I just destroyed their anniversary.
Who's Jennifer? Yeah. All right.
I was like, I did this wonderful thing for you. They're going to mention us on the... Oh, they got your name wrong.
You know...
Sorry, honey.
You know what would make this even better? Is if at some point, like if in his past he'd had an ex named Jennifer.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody to whom he was engaged previously. You know? Maybe her name actually makes Jessica flinch. Maybe she cringes. Maybe she cries a little bit every. Maybe just hearing the name Jennifer actually is just enough to, just to bring her to tears. I'm just saying. I'm trying to look on the positive side. I mean, from over here anyway.
Mm.
Anywho, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for coming along. And so forth. By the way, that song we just heard was Broken Record by, well, that's Roger Klein, who just announced tour dates yesterday, coming back to Portland. As I say coming back to Portland like there was ever a question. It's sort of like when you say that, like, Steve Miller is coming back somewhere, or the, Jesus, or Bowling for Soup. Let's talk about Bowling for Soup for a second. A band that I don't dislike in any way. I mean, it's a fine band. They create some nice songs. But, Jesus, they're here, like, every 3 weeks, and it's always at the Hawthorne Theater. I don't know what this is all about. They might as well just leave the thing up on the reader board all the time and then the marquee. Without exaggeration, I think Bowling for Soup is at the Hawthorne Theater about every 90 days or something. So there must be some not terribly large but devoted stronghold of, like, Bowling for Soup fans here or something. So in any event, for those people who care about such things, and I know you are legion here in Portland, so Roger Klein coming back to Barbati's. Which is really the site of just the best shows of his that I've ever seen in my life. That is this November. So you can go to his website then. We'll try to I think the last time he was in town, I think it was on a Saturday, and we were trying to get him on the show because we've had him on several times. We didn't really work out, so we'll try to do it again this time. Oh, by the way, speaking of that and this and things of that nature and stuff that is related to the thing I was just talking about, which is like this thing that I'm about to tell you, but not entirely like this. It's sort of like that, but it's more like this thing that you're going to hear about tomorrow.
You're making me dizzy.
It's the Kahlua, baby. It ain't Rick. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I have to stop now because I'm gibbering myself into a froth. I don't think I can actually officially announce it till tomorrow. I mentioned that we've interviewed many fine folk on the show over the years, and by the way, that's never through my own effort. That is always because there's somebody smarter and better and harder working than myself who makes that happen. So, like after many years, you know, we got an interview with Peter Criss from Kiss. So that was like off my list of things to do. And that was Scotty J, I believe, who did it inexplicably enough. I think it was Scotty who finally did that. One of the guys who was on my list of like the three people I must interview before I die, who was Alice Cooper, Greg. It was just like 2 days before they fired us at KUFO, by the way. I mean, skin of my teeth there. Greg finally got us hooked up with Alice Cooper, which is great. I mean, it was a good interview. Not a great interview, only because, you know, it was short, and KUFO, everything had to be like 4 seconds long. So it was like, you know, we basically in and out and done, but it was cool. I got to tell him how awesome he was and you rule and, you know, whatever. There's always somebody sort of behind the scenes that makes everything like that happen, and then I just hog the glory because it's really that's one of my I have a +5 glory hogging ability. So Cheryl Kanakoa, who is our chief of staff, you know, we've already got like the Terry Brooks thing happening, I think, and maybe that's sometime next week. I'm gonna try to get a date on that. I don't want to announce this other thing because it hasn't actually. Do you know what the thing I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
There is another guest that we've been we that she's been working on getting. See, there I'm doing it like without even trying. Is it that we by we I mean I? There's another guest that Cheryl has been working on getting, and she sent me an email this morning. I'm just going to read you the email without giving the person's name. Let's see the subject line of this email, all caps. You owe me big. And then the email itself says, "I am in the process of scheduling blank for you right now," and it's the person's name. I think tomorrow. Tomorrow being Friday the 27th, I think we'll be able to say who that is, and it's pretty damn cool. That's all I can say. It's pretty great.
I have no idea.
Would you like to ask me a clarifying question or two?
No.
Oh, come on.
You
ask
tell me off the air later. I'll know.
No, but see, if I tell you off the air, then it's not fair to the audience. Then it's like you've got secret knowledge they don't have, and then they hate you.
Was he an annoying young actor on a science fiction television show?
No, who are you talking about?
We were trying to get Will Wheaton there.
No. I just tell you, like, Will Wheaton, baby. That's the thing. I might tease that, I guess, if it wasn't confirmed. That is a thing that's still on our list. We're still working the Wheaton angle.
Is it someone in the entertainment industry?
Yes, it is.
Is this person a male?
Yes.
Do they do music?
Yes. It is a male musician.
Does he play the accordion?
Possibly. No, it's not Weird Al Yankovic. It is not. No. So that's all it should. So we are working on. I'll say this. And
I'll
then
bet
I,
it's not Art Alexakis.
I won't. Well, it's not. I will say this, and then I'll just move on. People will have different degrees of interest in this actual person and his actual music. In other words, you know, I'm not somebody who's going to be huge, like, oh, yeah, oh, I got all his records. But almost everyone will know who it is. And 99.99999 repeating percent of people will go like, ah, I know that band. And will recognize the significance of this person and his music. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm excited,
and
I don't know anything.
It's I was almost going to.
Someone in the text box guesses it's Kenny G, the Pied Piper of Tiny Asian Women.
Is that true? That he's the Pied Piper of Tiny Asian? Wait, what does that even mean?
I don't know, but I like it.
Let me ask you this, Don Taylor.
Yeah.
What is it about the Piper that makes him pied? What does that mean? He's the Pied Piper.
I have no idea.
He's been. I mean, it makes it sound like he's been hit with a pie. Which obviously that would be dumb. So that's almost certainly not the reason. What is the Pied Piper? It doesn't make any sense at all.
I don't know. Sadly, I never really thought about it.
I think about that all the time, but it's a thing I've never really found the answer to. So
I know that he was from Hamlin.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, let me just read this email, and then we've got some more news we'll get to. Taser Watch, Cannibal Watch, Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical. Where is my? Let's see. Here's my email music. Subject line, naked pictures of Chelsea Clinton. Sorry, Rick, no pictures to be had. It's the only way I knew I could get your attention. I'm going on a vacation for a couple weeks, and besides listening to Legion of News and Rick Emerson Show, I need some book ideas to read while I am there. The last time I was on vacation, I read The Road, Heart-Shaped Box, and Dostoevsky's The Idiot. I'm going to Powell's on Cedar Hills Crossing and would like to have some new book ideas. Pleased to be helping. Also, I'm trying to make a music CD for driving around, so if you could throw some ideas out. I already have Roger Klein, et cetera, et cetera. I know it's too much to ask for 32 cents a day, but I am spreading the word like syphilis. Signed, I believe his name is Kirill. 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 Whatever. It's a name. So there you go. So because Rick Emerson cares, we'll do music recommendations tomorrow. Right now, Don Taylor and I will each recommend one book that you ought to be reading as you were going on vacation. So you, the last time you read The Road, Heart-Shaped Box, which is by Joe Hill, Stephen King's son, and Dostoevsky's The Idiot. Don Taylor, one book he ought to read.
Well, this is a little bit lighter as far as content than those, but not subject matter. I'd recommend The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. Actually, since it's a fairly quick read because it's a young adult book, you could also pick up the second book in the trilogy, which is called, I believe, Chasing Fire. Catching Fire. It's called Catching Fire. And these are sort of this kind of post-apocalyptic, dystopian I was trying to think of the name of something and I couldn't at the moment. But it's kind of like a battle royale meets what the hell is that science fiction movie with Farrah Fawcett and them running around and they're chasing them and they
like Logan's
Run. Logan's Run. It's kind of a Logan's Run meets battle royale.
And it's called what?
And it's called The Hunger Games.
The Hunger Games.
And the third book in the trilogy just came out this week.
Excellent. My recommendation would be and then I'll give a little just adjunct to this. My recommendation if you're going on vacation would more than likely be Last Chance to See by Douglas Adams. And his co-writer, whose name escapes me at the moment, but it's largely by Douglas Adams, who was, of course, the author of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Last Chance to See is – I think it may be the only nonfiction book he ever wrote, the only nonfiction full-length work. But Douglas Adams wrote this book in about 1993, I think. And he and a co-author who was from the BBC, they traveled around the world going to see various endangered species before they became extinct. And I should say out of the gate, it's not like a heavy-handed sort of like, like a lecture-y environmentally book. I mean, there's a lot of that, you know, a lot of those sort of sentiments are in there, but it's not a preachy, finger-wagging book in any way. It's just a fascinating sort of travelogue written by Douglas Adams about going to see, like some kind of lemur or something, some specific kind of animal before it vanishes off the face of the earth. But of course, that involves going to these incredibly like remote, out of the way, far far-flung sections of the globe. And Douglas Adams, as he himself will tell you, is not really much of an outdoorsman. So it just ends up being sort of hilarious and fascinating and sweet and sentimental and absurd and ridiculous and heartwarming and whatever. And it's great because it's Douglas Adams. Last chance to see. I would recommend that and/or Travels by Michael Crichton, which is pretty much the same thing. It's sort of a collection of nonfiction. I was going to recommend this other book, but I don't even know if I want to do it. I have to tell you that I don't even know if I should say this now. If I should say it now, I should wait. Nah, screw it. I'm going to wait.
Well, I will say, I just finished rereading a book that I really love, and it's always great when you can go back and read a book again and enjoy it again the second time. And it's by an author named Joe Menno, M-E-N-O, and the book is called The Boy Detective Fails. And it's about he was a boy detective with his sister and his best friend, much like the sort of Hardy Boys, Bobbsey Twins kind of thing, only he went away to college and stopped solving crimes, and then his sister killed herself, and he ends up having a nervous breakdown and being in a mental institution, and now he's like 40 and trying to make his way in the world, and but all he ever really was in life was the boy detective. And it's very funny in a very—
It sounds funny.
It's very funny in a very wry, dark sort of a way, but it's also very touching and warm, and it's a very odd and very— very delightful book.
And then one final thing. You have to have read Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a thing that I always just recommend to people as like a default setting. But here's the thing. I have never once recommended that book to somebody who hadn't already read it. Because it's like a thing that I guess it's like required reading now, which is sort of great.
I love Michael Shabana. Have you read The Yiddish Policeman's
I have
Union?
Actually read nothing else by him. And just because, as I would say, that I just don't read a lot of fiction. And so therefore, the odds are always, whatever it is you mention that's fiction, I probably have not read it, because it's like I read one fiction book for every, like nine nonfiction books that I read. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. You're on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Yes, I'm trying to get in, and they don't log me in.
Who is this, sir?
This is Gary Adams. I've signed up for the afternoon show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were trying to log into the building, and then I was aware, and then I was just so terribly afraid that this was Joseph Rose from the Oregonian. All right, I'll tell you what. So you are you have a subscription, and the registrations are working.
I have a PayPal prescription.
Is this are you trying to get in to listen on your computer or on your phone, sir?
On the phone, on the computer.
All right. Actually, I'll tell you what. Let's see.
Well, he may have paid, and Cheryl hasn't emailed him his thing yet.
That was going to be my first thing, but I was going to try to figure out exactly how we could sort of get his information with that sort of given out. When did you subscribe, sir?
It was plenty of time. It was. It should be in effect right now.
But when was it, though?
Let's see. This was payment started on August 25th.
Well, so that would have been yesterday. Well, okay, I'll tell you what. What is your first name?
First name?
Yes, what is your first name, sir?
Birthday? Or first name?
What is your first name, sir?
Gary.
All right, Gary.
G-A-R-Y.
All right, I'll tell you what. We're going to put a pin in this. Gary, I will contact Cheryl Kanakoa, who is sort of the person behind the scenes that handles a lot of this. Because, like, and this is a thing we always note, that this is I'm not even going to say it's good news, bad news. It's all good news, but it's just a thing that people are not really aware of sometimes. A lot of places you go, and there's, like, an automated system that signs people up, but there's some sort of, computer program that does it. But here, it is all done by hand, not unlike the finest pastries. It's all put together by hand. So I'll tell you what, Gary, we will look into it, because all that stuff gets processed by an actual human being to try to avoid errors, but as a result, it doesn't happen immediately. So thank you for making me aware of the problem, and here's what I'm going to do. I will get in touch with Cheryl. We'll try to get that taken care of, like, within the next little bit today. So, but thank you for subscribing, my friend. It means a great deal. So there you go. All right, well, that's okay. So that is Gary. So Gary, thank you, and I'm going to pass it along in 10 seconds here. So there you go. That is Gary. So thank you for the support, sir. All right. Don Taylor?
If I can just to update and clarify to previous things we talked about,
yes.
According to Wikipedia, pied means multicolored. So the Pied Piper was wearing multicolored clothing is why he was pied.
All right.
And the Kenny G thing apparently came from an episode of Fun Employment Radio. A friend of Sarah has a friend who gets things for celebrities. And mentioned that one of the things that they get for celebrities is tiny Asian women for Kenny G. And apparently, they talked about this before anyone on the show realized that Kenny G is married, and they probably shouldn't have been talking about
it. What do you mean tiny Asian women, though?
I mean, so they said tiny Asian
but
women.
But I mean, Asian women are sort of, they are somewhat diminutive, you know, in general.
I'm just guessing that Kenny G specified he wanted tiny Asian
Is he
women.
A tiny man? Is he a small man?
He might be.
I can't really ever tell. I've never seen him against an object of known size, because, like, I don't know how big.
Other than
like
a trumpet.
No, you got the instrument wrong. It's a clarinet.
Was he a clarinet?
Or a piccolo or something. It's not a trumpet, though. It's nothing that requires...
It's a piccolo, but it looks the size of a clarinet because he's so tiny. He's such a wee little man.
Oh, see, I thought you were doing something else there. All right.
And now...
Or the saxophone. Doesn't he play the saxophone?
This is Don Taylor.
Baby. All right, I'm going to make sure... I'm going to pass along... I'm going to get Gary's information to Cheryl here.
An 88-year-old man was in intensive care after his neighbor's goat attacked him for an hour. Vestal Davis of Colbert, Georgia, called the emergency services after the attack. Mr. Davis stated that he went outside to his shop and looked up, and a goat charged him, knocking him to the ground, according to the police report. He stated that every time he moved to get up, the goat would attack him again. Mr. Davis' 69-year-old neighbor, who owns the goat, told the police that the animal escaped from its pen, but he did not know about the attack. Sheriff Kip Thomas said that the police planned to charge the goat's owner with allowing livestock to roam free.
Kip, get my goat.
I'm just hoping that Mr. Davis gets all right. I was stunned when I heard it, Colbert Mayor Chris Peck said. I know the man that owned the goat, and he wouldn't hurt anybody. I think it's an unfortunate accident that happened.
I wasn't really listening to the first sentence there, because I was getting Gary's information there. Was the goat provoked in some way?
No, he's an 88-year-old man, and he went out to his shop.
And the goat was just sort of there waiting for him.
The goat just leapt at him. And attacked him, and then wouldn't let him back up for like an hour.
You don't really think of that as goat-like behavior.
Goats can be pretty irascible.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Are they sort of a testy animal?
Yeah.
All right.
They can be cranky.
You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. By the way, since we were just talking to Gary there about the subscription, I should actually note at this point that there are many people. I know that this is inexplicable. It defies logic. You can't even conceive of how such a situation would exist. But there are people who are not listening to the Rick Emerson program.
What?
I don't mean just like right now at this very moment in time. I mean in general.
Huh?
They're not listening.
What?
They're not. It's sort of like when you meet someone who hasn't known, you know, the healing and sin cleansing power of Jesus, and you say to yourself, you know, I don't even know how one faces the existential horror of daily life without the sweet succor. Of this program, or Jesus. But, you know, today we're talking about this program. And so here's a simple solution to that. We are doing you the favor of making it easier to give your friends the gift of Rick Emerson, which is really the only gift that matters in this world of ours. That is the Emerson Grant. And the Emerson Grant is being offered in conjunction with our friends at New Millennium Maintenance. You can find out more about them at rickemerson.com. At rickemerson.com, New Millennium Maintenance. And the Emerson Grant is something where we are offering every single month 10 subscriptions. That is 10 one-month subscriptions to this, the Rick Emerson radio program. And if you are already a subscriber, you're not able to win one for yourself, but you can win one for somebody you know. So if you got a friend, loved one, casual sex partner perhaps, office mate, somebody who is not listening to the Rick Emerson show, and you say to yourself, my God, if they could only try it, if you know somebody, and not unlike Siegfried with the Schindler's List, you know, and he says, I know that Dawn would love Schindler's List if only I could get her to watch it. That's exactly what the show is like. It's like Schindler's List. If you could only get your friend to experience the majesty of the Rick Emerson radio program, they'd become a lifelong fan. Or perhaps, they're just maybe a little low on funds. Or every now and again, this doesn't happen a lot, every now and again, we kind of come across somebody who's been a longtime fan of the show, but they're just not aware that the show is back, you know. And I'll get these emails from people who, they'll be like, hey, great show, I've been listening for a long time. Let me know whenever you're on the internet or something. And I'll email back like, dear guy, and then I have to give them the whole explanation. If you know somebody who's in that situation, you know that they love the show, here's what you do. You make a YouTube video of no more than 2 minutes in length. That is, no more than 2 minutes in length. You send the link to that YouTube video to video@rickemerson.com. You just make a video explaining why you or somebody you know, in this case, should receive a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson radio program. You send the link to video@rickemerson.com. And, of course, 10 Emerson grants are going to be awarded each month. So don't delay. You get that sent through video at rickemerson.com. Our thanks to New Millennium Maintenance for making this possible. Contact them for landscaping, maintenance, or nuisance abatement solutions for your neighborhood or home. And that is video at rickemerson.com. This, however, is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our Taser Watch.
Here is your Taser Watch for, what is today? Today is Thursday, yes?
Yes, indeed.
For Thursday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is your Taser Watch for Thursday.
Lincoln County, North Carolina sheriff's deputies used a taser on a nude man who they said exchanged gunfire with a church member at Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church. The church member called for help on Saturday afternoon after seeing Jeremiah Blackburn, 49, strip off all of his clothes on church grounds. Gerald Neff, who's also a member of the church, came to try and help. Blackburn grabbed a gun from a nearby bag when Neff arrived, deputies said, and started shooting. Neff, who was also armed, said he ducked behind his truck and called 911. He's standing on the front church naked, and then he pulled a gun and started shooting at me, so then I shot back at him, Neff said.
So wait, so Neff, he's a churchgoer as well.
Right.
He's a guy who happens to be there.
He came by to help. Yes.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Neither man was hit. Deputies arrived at the church and said Blackburn didn't comply with their commands. A deputy then used a taser on Blackburn, according to the sheriff's office. Blackburn was taken to Carolina's Medical Center to have the taser prongs removed and to be treated for abrasions obtained during the scuffle.
And does it say that he was there and then he stripped while in attendance?
Yeah, well, it was Saturday, so I'm thinking maybe church wasn't actually in session, but he went to the church, was on the church grounds, stripped off all of his clothes, and I guess was God only knows what he was up to. And when the other fella came along to try and help, the naked man grabbed a gun, and there was a gunplay between the two.
Here's the thing. I know we've got problems right here in River City and beyond. You know, this is the world and, you know, our own United States. We're not without issues. We've got, there are social ills and we've got stresses and there's, you know, corruption and we've got the, you know, disease and poverty and whatever. I know that the thing's going wrong. But does it sometimes strike you as miraculous that the entire world is not just constant anarchy and chaos everywhere?
Yeah.
I mean, you would only need to increase the percentage of guys like this in society by, like, you know, 3%, and we could no longer – the entire place would be untenable. Everything would come apart.
When you think about it, though, that's really kind of the whole point of society. That's what a society is about, is that, yes, we have laws, but much of our behavior is corralled just – through, you know, unspoken agreement.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is it's like we all just sort of it really is like it, to use the example we always use, it's the it's that thing when you're crossing the Ross Island Bridge, you're just sort of assuming the guys in the oncoming lane won't swerve into you. And a couple of them will over the course of a year, but not most of them. And that's really the only thing that makes everything work, because we all just sort of look each other in the eye, you know, and just sort of go, well, OK, I guess we'll all just, you know, we'll all just acknowledge, as you said, all these unspoken rules and not just sort of unspool ourselves publicly,
yeah,
as this guy did. But if that were just it's like they always say the thing about it, that if, you know, if the Earth's oceans were to, you know, raise by even an inch and a half, it would be disaster everywhere. If you had 1% more of guys like this, the days would be a lot more interesting. And I think we would just veer towards chaos a lot more than we do now. So it's good to put things in perspective now and again, because for every guy like this, probably most of the people, you know, on a daily basis, whoever it is, you know, wherever you are, wherever you're working right now, probably nobody you know is going to take off their pants and tase a guy, you know? I mean, they might, but probably not. And
probably
I mean,
not.
That is really something to that's something to warm your heart in its darkest moments. There's your Taser Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program. Like, It's like Trent Reznor said this thing one time. He was back in, like, I don't know, 92, 93. I remember this interview with Trent Reznor where he said that part of true love was knowing that you could be knifed in your sleep at any moment, which is a thing that I'd never really thought about until he said that. And then I just went through a period of about 6 months where I just tried never to fall asleep anywhere, where I didn't, you know, if I thought there might be knives around and I didn't really know the person, I tried to make sure that I was gone before I fell asleep.
I'll tell you something my husband said to me last night, which I, at the time he said it, I thought, wow, this is emblematic of so much of my marriage, really. It sums up our relationship so well. Because this online company that I buy makeup from, every time I buy makeup, they have this box that says, do you want a free magazine subscription? And I always say, sure, because, like, hey, free magazines.
Right.
And then I forget about it. And 2 months later, I go, why am I getting Latina? You know? And so I'm getting these stupid magazines I don't want. One of them is Vogue. And the fall fashion issue of Vogue showed up in my mailbox. It is, and I'm not exaggerating, because it even says on the cover, 726 pages long.
Wow.
It weighs like 12 pounds, and it's mostly ads. And it's all. So I looked at it, and I didn't have a book to read, and I was looking at it. And so I say to my husband last night, well, I guess I'll peruse what skinny rich women are going to be wearing next fall. I said, not that that has anything to do with me. And he just looks at me and goes, well, maybe you win the lottery and get cancer.
You know, and I can see the thing is, I don't even have to really work hard. I can just picture him saying that with little or no effort. So I would say that is, if one were to reduce the tone and vibe of your relationship, at least from what I have seen,
yeah,
to just do a handful of sentences, a couple of words, it'd be that.
Yeah,
right there.
That really summed it up nicely.
Well done. Hey, speaking of Vogue and chick magazines, and I know that men's magazines are kind of weird. Like if you look at, you know, whatever, like Maxim or something, and or the ones that always weird me out, the guy magazines weird me out, are like the Muscle and Fitness magazine, where it's just like some roided up freak on the cover. And you just say to yourself, like, who are these guys? Like, what are these guys? That, and I really do wonder about that. I wonder about the guys on the cover of workout magazines that are, and I'm not talking about a guy who's in good shape. I mean, I'm going to talk about the freak specimens.
Yeah.
It's like, what do those guys do? Because you can't make money as a weightlifter or a bodybuilder. I mean, there's like one guy in the world probably who makes a living at that. So what do those guys do when they're not? When they're not on the cover of the magazine, you know? Like those guys who just have the absurdly ripped bodies. I mean, you got to have a job, right? I mean, they got to make money. One has to buy one's mega carb powdered bulk up formula somewhere. So what do they do to, you know, for cash, do you think?
I don't know. I only ever dated one guy that was really in super, like, hyper excellent shape like that. He was he did a lot of weight training, and he was seriously into competitive karate. And he was not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Yeah.
But he worked as a machinist.
Well, I guess I could see that. Anyway, so, you know, I know men's magazines are kind of weird. Women's magazines, though, are just strange. And as you said, and they're huge. I mean, they've all got like these. I mean, they're just mad. They're like the worst, of course, are bridal magazines, which are just.
Oh, yeah.
Bridal magazines are basically just they're basically just catalogs. But I mean, you'll see them like on the stands at the magazine store, like at Powell's, as though they were an actual magazine. And they're just gigantic. Have you seen the cover, though, of this month's? Let's see. Where is it? Have you seen the cover of this month's Cosmo?
No.
I'm going to see if I can actually find it so I can read it. So I can read it word for word. Let's see. And this is one of those. Let's see if I've got this here. This is the. Let's see right here. This is the. Let's see. I'm trying to find the. Here we go. All right. Let's see if I can actually get the picture. This is the new one. It's got you'll know it because it's got Jessica Alba on the cover. It's like a light blue, and it's got a picture of Jessica Alba. And it says, let's see. I'm trying to read the sub headline here. So I'm having to. All right. The headline in this month's Cosmo, and this is where there's the thing where there's the masthead where it says the name of the magazine, and then there's the little. I forget what they call this little sunburst, which is like a circle, and it says, like, you know, 325 new looks for you. And then there's the small print down each side of the cover where it, you know, it's like all the less important articles. Then there's the celebrity picture in the middle, And then at the end, every Cosmo was laid out the same way. Because I used to subscribe to Cosmo when I was before the internet. That's how you prepared for your zany talk show host, you know, gig, is that you would read like chick magazines. And then you'd say, like, what is the deal with ladies? And then, like, whatever you saw on page, like, 85. But so every Cosmo is laid out the same way. And then in the lower center of the cover, in large print, is whatever the eye-catching article is for that month that they're hoping will get you to pick the magazine up off the shelf at Safeway, where it sits next to, like, Tic Tacs and D-cell batteries. And just buy it, you know, along with your, like, bananas and your guava, and just take it on home. The cover of this month's Cosmo, I swear to Christ, the lead article, which is just absurd in, like, 100 different ways, not least of which is because it perpetuates this this trend of women speaking as though they are babies. The headline in this month's Cosmopolitan is, this is a magazine for women, you understand now, not a magazine for, like, prepubescence or for giggly high school girls, one imagines. This is purportedly for today's adult, mature and stylish, you know, woman. This is today's grown adult woman around town embracing her sexuality as a serious adult.
Mm-hmm.
Untamed vajayjays, it says. Now, just in that, I don't even know if that's one word or four, frankly. But just right there, I mean, there's enough for like 3 hours worth of discussion. But the subtitle is, it's Untamed Vajayjays. Hey, Don Taylor, guess what sexy style is back? So there you go. So apparently if you were not privy to this, one might say, Cosmo is here to enlighten you as to the style sexiest for your vajayjay.
First of all, this is another one of those semantic issues that I would like to take issue with. Once we started seeing celebrities getting pictures taken of them getting out of cars at restaurants without any underwear on, and so we kept hearing, you know, and I saw her vagina. Okay, here's the thing. Here's a tip. The vagina is internal. It's internal. You can't style it.
Yeah. Well,
you can't see it.
Not without a scalpel.
You can't see it with a camera when somebody's getting out of a car.
Yes.
It's internal.
Yeah, I know. But...
no woman with a triple-digit IQ reads Cosmopolitan unironically. No, the only people who read Cosmopolitan are young girls, like teenagers, who are trying to figure out how to be adults and are being led horribly astray by Cosmopolitan, or grown women who are idiots.
I would also say, by the way, if you're a grown woman and you can't bring yourself to just say the word vagina, you shouldn't be using it for anything.
We can blame Oprah for that, because she's the one who coined the cutesy term.
I hate that phrase. I hate that term so much. It's just you know why? Because it's one of those things. It's one of those things that is masking like a weird American prudishness with ostensible cleverness.
Yeah,
like it sort of wants to be funny, but really it's just funny, just hiding the fact that you are yet another adult who is incredibly repressed about sex.
Yeah, being coy about anatomy is not adorable.
Nah, that's what I'm saying.
It's just stupid.
All right, let's do this. We will. Yes.
And Thomas Gill always with the clarification.
Making a labial clarification
pops up in the textbook. The outside is vulva.
Okay.
Thank you, Thomas Gill.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Volvo. Here's Don Taylor, kids.
An Iranian journalist is suing phone company Nokia over surveillance technology that helped Iranian authorities track and arrest him, ABC reported today. Issa Saharkis was captured and sent to jail more than a year ago, and his family say has broken ribs from his severe beatings. The journalist was charged with trying to overthrow the Iranian government because of an article he wrote during last year's opposition protests. Although Saharkis left Tehran and went into hiding, authorities managed to track him down after he turned on his Nokia mobile phone briefly to give an interview. Through his son in New York, the journalist is suing Nokia in a U.S. court on the grounds he was beaten and mistreated because the company knowingly sold its surveillance technology to the Iranian regime, which is renowned for its human rights abuses. He says the technology, which enables authorities to track mobile phone users, allowed the regime to monitor his phone calls. Nokia sold this technology to Iran knowing it would be used not in the way it was meant to be, said Saharkis' son, Mehdi. We're talking about a country that all around the world you're not able to sell airplane spare parts to, but Nokia, for making a few more bucks, they've risked people's lives.
You would think that you would sort of know that, by the way. The idea that is what the British legal system calls a transparent falsehood. I had no idea that Iran would misuse this technology we sold them. There was no evidence or prior behavior to indicate that they would take this course of action.
Yes, Nokia has admitted to selling the technology to Iran, which says it is a standard feature for law enforcement, but says Iran is to blame for misusing the technology.
Well, that is also true. That's a whole, like, you know what it is? That's one of those whole, like, well, BitTorrent has many legitimate applications. Yes, we all know that that's true. We all know that none of them are used, though. I suppose it's ultimately on Iran, but, you know, Iran. Whatever. All right, here's Don Taylor. Jesus.
Let's do the Cannibal Watch.
Christ almighty. The world is just one big madhouse. It's a madhouse inside a zoo, inside another thing that's equally weird. I don't know what the other thing is, but it's bad. Here's your Cannibal Watch. Here's Don Taylor with your Cannibal Watch.
In a prominent advertising campaign on the internet, in German newspapers, and on television, a restaurant, Fleim, F-L-I-M-E, I don't know how you pronounce that in German, is appealing for willing donors and diners to become members of what it hints at being a new dining movement. According to...
Placenta.
The advertisement reads, members declare themselves willing to donate any part of their body, adding that any resulting hospital costs will be taken on by the restaurant. They say they're also looking to employ an open-minded surgeon. The location of the restaurant, if it exists, is still being kept a secret, as is the identity of the owners and investors behind it.
So this is a restaurant where you would – I'm unclear. This is – it would be a – not a restaurant as such, but a sort of secret dining society where there would be donors and eaters. Mm-hmm. And donors would, like, offer, like, an earlobe or a hand or something, and then eaters would consume it.
Yes.
And then there'd be some sort of a price negotiated and agreed upon by all parties.
Yes. They promised to turn those body parts into gourmet meals according to the age-old cooking habits of an Amazonian tribe famous for cannibalism.
Here's the thing, and you would sort of just dismiss this as being lunacy if it were in a different country.
Yeah.
If it were not in Germany. But in Germany, they're really just, you know, there's no story that is too strange to come out of that place, and yet, you know, but that it isn't also true.
As a foretaste of its menu, Fleim is suggesting traditional Brazilian dishes such as bolinho, which it describes as fried tater balls with a sweet and sour dip, or feijoada, a main course consisting of various pieces of meat with black beans and rice. It does not specify which type of meat is used. The restaurant cites as an inspiration the indigenous Brazilian Waricaca tribe, which once practiced the ritual of compassionate cannibalism, or eating parts of the corpse of a loved one to emphasize the connection between the living and the dead. The advertising campaign has provoked incredulity and outrage in equal measure. Michael Braun, the vice chairman of Berlin's Christian Democrat Party, said he'd received several protest emails calling for the restaurant to be banned. He'd been unable to get to the bottom of who was behind what he said might be a stunt.
You know, it always nags at me. This is one of my great regrets, is that I was never really able to. We were never able to get this guy in. I think it was Bend or Eugene, maybe. It might have been Eugene. This guy who wanted to be eaten. Because, you know, every year or so. And that's the thing that didn't happen up until like 10 years ago. I think it's the thing that only – it's like furries or something. That maybe – it might have existed, but you never heard about it. And it didn't and if you were a furry like 50 years ago, you had no means by which to find other furries.
Right.
And so you lived your whole life basically never externalizing that. It was always just a hidden thing. Whereas now, you know, whatever. If there's 1% of the population that's furries, it's still like, you know, 1 million people or something. And, you know, you can, you know, meet online and blah, blah, blah. So maybe the cannibalism thing did exist a long time ago, you know, in terms of people who wanted to be eaten. But they never really had an outlet. So, you know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, you would start to hear these stories of some guy who goes over to some other guy's house because he wants to be, you know, peppered and tenderized and, you know, consumed like during a poker game or something. And the guy in Germany was sort of the most notorious case. And then, we got, I don't even remember how this happened, actually. I think a listener emailed us years – this is maybe like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. A listener emailed us and said that he had been in some Yahoo chat room and some guy was looking for people to eat him. And he passed us the email – the contact information for the guy. And we had like these several online chats with him. We didn't talk to him in person over the phone, but we had these online chats with him about him wanting to be eaten. And it seemed very legitimate in that he didn't seem like a guy – because you figure if some guy was pretending to be that way, he would be a little too over the top or too obvious about it. This guy seemed authentically crazy and really serious enough about it that it didn't seem like he was just fabricating the whole thing. And I think it all fell apart when we tried to get him on the show for like an interview. And I think that was when we asked for his phone number. I think that's when he quit communicating with us. I have always regretted that we were not able to like close, you know, actually solidify communications with him, because I want to know what that's all about.
Yeah.
There's, you know.
I said about a year ago or so, I ran across this woman on the internet who's a really terrific artist and cartoonist, but she specializes in this these fetish cartoons about women being tied up and trussed up and surrounded by vegetables on big platters and put into ovens and cooked. And she also did photography. Of I think it was herself trussed up that way, that sort of thing, on a big platter surrounded by vegetables as if she was going to go into the oven and be cooked. And apparently there is anything that you can imagine, apparently there is a fetish community of people who are into that. And I was like, really? There are guys who are into fantasizing about cooking and eating women?
See, and I thought you were just going with the whole food thing, because that's a well-established fetish that I don't understand. But I mean, you know, whatever. It's a big world. You know, the whole food sex thing, I just don't, yeah. I don't get that. But the whole cook me and eat me thing is, I mean, I guess, as you said, it shouldn't surprise me, because no matter what you can think of, there's enough people in the world that there's going to be some folks who are into it. But that's just, I mean, that I just don't know what that's all about.
No matter how jaded I think I am, something will come along that I'll just go, huh?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, it's like,
what?
Can I just show you this? Speaking of movies that I've had for a long time and haven't watched, you know, like the Bride of Frankenstein thing. So I got this other movie at home that I actually looked forward to with sort of great interest. And then I got it when it came out, and I just I got it from Netflix, and it's just been, you know, it's one of those Netflix things where it just sits there and you look at it and you go, and then you, in your heart, you know, you will eventually send it back unwatched. But I got this, and it was at Sundance. It was very well regarded. It's this documentary called Zoo.
I've wanted to see that, and I heard that it was ultimately actually a little boring.
And it's all about the Kenneth Pinion guy in Enum Claw who was like getting it on with a horse.
Yeah.
And then he died of a perforated colon and whatever. But it's an actual documentary, and it was at Sundance a couple years ago. And I heard the same thing. It's kind of boring and way too arty for its own sake and whatever. But it's an interesting thing just because I just wonder, what goes on in somebody's childhood? Like, I can think of a lot of things that might happen to you when you're a kid that would F you up in some way.
Yeah.
And it should come as no surprise that my share, at least, if not more than my share of people, many of the women who are just a little off in some way. You know, what I mean, look, we're all adults here with our JJs and whatnot. What?
I just enjoy the phrase, we're all adults here with our JJs and whatnot, is just one of those phrases I never thought anyone would say to me.
Well, part of breaking new ground.
Jot that down. I think that's a future T-shirt for the Emerson News Network.
Anyway, it's the new the booby doctor is in. I'm not trying to work blue is my thing. So, but I think that some of us, and this probably goes for women. Although I'd be curious to know what the inverse of this is. I'm curious to know what the female equivalent is. But many guys, at some point you have maybe been with a woman in some in a capital B sense, you've been with her, and it will emerge usually not on the first evening. Usually this is a thing that happens over the course of however long. It will emerge that maybe that she has a proclivity for or a desire for things that indicate perhaps some kind of unhappiness in her childhood. And, you know, and you can connect those dots pretty easily, you know, uh-huh. where it's like, you know, it's like on Family Feud or something, or what's that thing in Highlights where you draw the line from the capital to the state, you know, and you say like Olympia, Washington, Sacramento, California. And so there's the whole thing, you know, like, wants to be referred to as something in particular. And then you realize, ah, well, then she must have done this at some point. You know what I'm trying to say.
No, I know.
I'm just walking, but you know what I mean.
I could fill in the blanks here. Yeah. Yes, there. Occasionally, people wish to, you know, there are activities they wish to engage in that you go, oh, you're a little twisted up, aren't you, honey?
You're treated in a specific fashion in a way that indicates something that may have happened to them in their formative years.
Yeah.
I don't know the guy equivalent of that. In other words, if you're a woman and you're out on the dating scene. You know, basically, I'll just put it this way. The thing that I was just ran into, and to the point that I started to think that there was something wrong with me, the thing that I just ran into, like, constantly, and I don't know why this is, I really don't, and it's probably a bigger discussion than we have time for now, but the thing that I ran into constantly was just, like, chicks that wanted to be really, like aggressively mistreated in some way. And I don't mean, like, with a branding iron. I mean, you know, I don't even necessarily even mean, like, in a sort of, like roughing you up in a sexy way kind of a way. I mean, like in a weird, like, verbal way as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, tell me how bad I am. But way beyond that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is about me that maybe attracts crazy chicks like that. But I don't know if guys are the same way. Like, I don't think you meet a lot of guys who really want to be mistreated. I think maybe that's the minority of warped guys.
Probably not. I've certainly met a couple, but they're not as much. Most of the way my experience has been with men, it usually goes the other direction.
Yeah.
They want to be the mistreater.
Yeah. And see, and that's like, and maybe I'm just not interesting enough, because I guess my whole thing, I think like many guys, if you meet a girl who has some, she has some particular, bent or some perversion that she's really into, I think I view that like a lot of guys. I view that the way that, you know, the guys, you know, even, you know, you're some swinging single man, you're out on the town or whatever. Like a lot of guys I know would view like rubbers, you know, where it's like, you know, nobody's thinking to themselves, I can't wait to have condomized sex. That's the best kind there is. I can't wait to put on like a full body wetsuit. And, you know, and just nobody really just like relishes the idea of having sex like wearing a rubber, you know, as contrasted with
say nobody. There are people who have latex fetishes.
Well, but you know what I'm saying? Generally speaking, people go like, oh, it's so much better when you have the rubber on. But with most guys, the thing is like, you go, we're like, well, okay, if somebody's asking me to put on a rubber, it means that I am about to have sexual relations with a lady. So, you know, whatever. It's like, whatever, you know, it's like, you know, I don't want to win the lottery and pay all those taxes. So that's just part of, you know, that's just part of your,
even bad pizza is still pizza.
Yeah, that's just part of, you know, that's part of your admission at the door. I'm okay with that. So it is with, like, the chick, you know, that wants you to, like, yank on her hair and tell her she's a naughty girl. Whatever. You know, if it's not necessarily my thing. But, if you know, if that's what it takes, fine. If that's what sealing the deal requires, if piercing one's Brosnan requires that you're going to play escaped convict and the warden's wife, you know what? Fine. Whatever. Whatever it takes to get the job done. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
That really ended up being more about me than about you or anybody you've dated.
I think we learned a lot today.
Well,
really,
you know, just that, you know, it's a zero-sum game. I'm really a destination-oriented guy is my thing, you know? Some people are about the journey. Somebody who's into that whole thing of the whole, tell me I'm naughty, whatever. That's a person who's into the journey. You know, guys, I think, are typically destination-oriented. Guys are like, at the end of this particular chain of behaviors, is there sex for me? Yes? All right. It's like a flow chart, you know? If I do this, will she put out, and will I then end the evening as I wish for it to end? Yes. All right. Then I will do whatever that is. Whereas if I do this, is she going to put out? No. No, I'm not going to do that. So that's like when some, you know, when like some girl asks you to like help her, you know, they move into another apartment. No, you just say no to that because, you know, unless she's like a good friend or something, because she's not going to put up for that.
It is interesting, though, how much different that whole scenario is for most women, though, because I think with most women, the situation ends up being that, wow, I would really like to have sex with this person. Oh, he wants me to do what? I don't want to anymore.
Yeah, maybe.
So, you know, it's a completely different result.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I just have some strange vibe about me, or maybe it's that I was, you know, a lot of those single years too, I was in Salt Lake. And women, here's the thing, is women in Salt Lake are just so unbelievably freaking warped because they're so just repressed. So maybe that's the deal. Maybe I was pulling from like a flawed gene pool or something.
There's also the sort of personality thing. There's the way you speak to people, the way that one talks to people, the way one presents oneself. I mean, my best friend and I talked about this once, how she's very similar to me in that very quick with sort of a snarky, sarcastic comment, that sort of thing. And we talked about the phenomenon of being at a party and ending up standing in the kitchen, and you end up with two or three guys standing around you looking at you adoringly because you've been mean to them.
Right.
It's like, She's rude. She was sarcastic to me.
Right.
I love her.
Yeah.
And you're standing there going, really? Someone who wants to be my doormat is actually the last person I'm going to go home with. But thank you for the offer.
It seems like if we continue this, we're just going to get into revelations that we probably this is going to go into a series of areas that are just, we should save this for another day. We should save this for a day when there's someone else in the studio that we can deflect all of this onto whom
we'll
we can
stop
project.
Us before we go too far.
Yeah, or that we can just sort of you know, that we can just externally make it seem like it's their problem, not ours. That we are ourselves are not warped. That it's someone else altogether. What are we doing here? It seems inappropriate to do the live commercial here. We should insert at least one story between discussion of whatever flogging and this in this next one. So let's do one more here, then we'll do that. We'll take a break, come back into the top five.
An Alabama Democrat insists he was just joking when he said House Speaker Nancy Pelosi might get sick and die before he has to decide whether to vote for her as leader again next year.
Well, it's a possibility.
The Montgomery Advertiser reports that Representative Bobby Bright was speaking at a Chamber of Commerce event in Montgomery on Wednesday when he was asked about his oft-criticized decision to support her as party leader after his 2008 election. Trying to deflect the issue, Bright said Pelosi could lose her election, decide against running for speaker again, or she might get sick and die. The paper said Bright made it clear he was joking, and the remark drew laughter from the crowd.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Sometimes insightful, sometimes informative, sometimes awkward, sometimes a mixture of all the above. Always entertaining. And brought to you by a series of folks. Well, first of all, yourselves and many of our proud business partners, you know, have provided services for or functions with various. What? You give me that look.
Nothing. I'm just waiting for you to wind it out.
No, I was going to say that, you know, there's, you know, we've had the business partners who have already provided services for many of the listeners. Like we had, you know, Michael Beatty, the cleaning solution.
Exactly.
Things from another world. And I've actually already heard from a couple people who have contacted Castalia Lang. My wife, actually, in addition to the listener, my wife was actually listening and she heard me talking about this. And because she's going to, let's see, what the hell? She's doing one of those weird, you know, like she has to make up. She doesn't just, you know, it's like pregnant women will sometimes say, like, I'm eating for two. My wife travels for two. She basically has to be twice as exciting because I'm so unbelievably lame. So she is going to Spain, Italy, Morocco, and then Turkey, and then back to Spain. For reasons, and I don't know where any of those countries are, by the way. So, I mean, I know they're over there somewhere. Like, they're not here in the studio with me, and they're probably, you know, and they're far away, I would imagine. So, but I don't know where they are in relation to each other. So I don't know how that even works. That might not even be physically possible, but she's apparently doing it. All I know is that she's going to actually go to, I think she said she's visiting either two or three different continents. I think it's two continents on this trip. It's weird. Anyway, so if the trip were not happening in the immediate future, I think she would actually be going to Castalia Language Center, like, now. But she's going to do that on her return because she wants to be more fluent in Spanish than she is. And she is sort of a, I don't know, what's one level below conversation? Maybe functional. You know, she can kind of feel her way around in Spanish, you know, somewhere like she's in a country, you know, where they speak Spanish. She can kind of, she knows enough to kind of get by. You know, and that's really what you would do. You want to get by, and then of course the next step is to be able to be conversational in it, but like in a real world way. You know, where you're not like using, you know, learning a bunch of phrases that don't actually have any application. You want to be able to go somewhere and talk the way that actual real people talk. And Castalia Language Center will help you do that. And the way they do it is by teaching adults. Now, you know, of course, and there's nothing wrong with kids learning a second language. You know, you can do that at school, and really, as time goes on, more and more kids do learn that in school. If you're an adult, you learn in a different way altogether, though. Your brain just functions differently, and you want to learn in a small class. That's the other thing. You want to learn in a class of just a handful of people. At Castalia Language Center, classes are limited to 8 students. The environment is comfortable. It's relaxed. The owner of the school, we've talked about her before. Her name is Clara Gremmel. She's actually from Argentina. She's a Spanish speaker, and she came here, you know, and now is actually helping to teach people Spanish in a way that functions. If you go into a place where you're going to be using that in a functional, everyday, conversational way. You can find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. Castalia Language Center. That is a small private school in downtown Portland offering Spanish language classes for adults. Find out more at PortlandSpanish.com. There you go. I love this Lenny D. All right, there you go. That's,
this reminds me of going roller skating as a kid.
Seriously, maybe tomorrow I'll bring in some of his. I'll bring in some of the vinyl just so you can see. And he always, the great thing about Lenny D is he had that great, when you get his vinyl records, and they all came out in the 60s, it would have this great sort of pop art look to them, the way that stuff in the 50s did, where it was all like in pinks and greens and with a lot of like boomerang, you know, shaped like formica,
That,
whatever those patterns are, and like the and like a lot of dotted. A lot of like bright dotted lines that sort of swirled into each other, like Arthur Murray dance patterns for the floor. I mean, it really is fantastic. It's quite something. So we got have we done both of our watches here?
We have indeed.
All right, so let's do this. I know we've got a few things that have piled up. Do we have a single news story we can do here?
We do.
To give us a little bit of breathing room. Then I'll do this song. We'll take a little. We'll do the song. We'll come back on the other side. We'll do your top five, and then we'll all leave, and we'll go on our merry way and return tomorrow with a brand new program for everyone.
Can I tell you this thing about my dreams first, really quick?
I've seen a way of stopping you, so go ahead.
Okay.
Is this about me?
No, not really.
Okay.
I've been sleeping really strange lately and having trouble getting to sleep at night, and then I wake up in the middle of the night. And night before last, I woke up, and it's been the same time I've woken up both nights. It's been like 3 a.m. Night before last, I woke up. I was having this very vivid dream in which I got out of bed and went to the kitchen. I closed the door really quietly behind me, which is, I think, because you and I had been talking about getting up in the middle of the night and snacking and trying not to wake up our spouse. So and in the dream, I got up, I closed the door, I went out to the kitchen, and there was this delicious cold pot roast that I was standing in the kitchen eating delicious cold pot roast. Then I woke up and realized I was still in bed and I was hungry.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I'm not really in the kitchen, but at least there's pot roast. Oh, there's not really pot roast. So then I was angry. But it was really disconcerting to have a dream in which I got out of bed and went and did something. Then last night, same time, I woke up from having a dream in which we were doing the show. I was actually listening to the show later in the archives. Listening back to the show in the archives and realized that none of the sound that we played, the music, the sound, anything, was audible on the archives. Like, none of it. And apparently we'd never realized this for months. And I woke up and I was panicked.
Well, I wonder what that could possibly be about. Well, I should note, first of all, before I get some snarky email to this effect, that we did go through a patch of shows where and I talked about this actually with you, that we went through a patch of shows where we were having these weird glitchy problems during the program, and those problems were caused by various configurations of audio equipment. And I was reconfiguring stuff like basically every night at around midnight. I would come in and I would sort of move things around to solve exactly that problem, because we went through a little bit of a phase here where just if you were listening to the show, we were fine and the audio was way lower than we were. In other words, we'd be talking and the music would just be buried. But that problem has been gone for some time now. So But here's the thing about that. That is not surprising, because it's just a variation on the dream that, like, because I know every industry probably has their own sort of panic dreams, but that's a variation on a dream that I have heard sort of permutations of from all kinds of people. Like Sarah has this dream constantly. She probably still does. I don't know. But Sarah would have this dream where she would be running, you know, not late, but the show was about to start. And she'd be like, you know, speeding to work and then sprinting in the hallway. And then the show was like 30 seconds from starting. And she would get to the studio door. She's not outside. She's like inside. But the studio door is just locked and she can't get in. And she can see us through the window. And she's like pounding, you know, on the weather engine, but the door, the handle just won't turn. She can't quite get in to start the program. And then she wakes up before, like, you know, the stroke of noon or whatever. But it's like 30 seconds to showtime, and she's just like pulling on the handle, and it won't open. And then my constant dream where I'm on the air, and it's like I'm talking, and the phone lines, you know, are ringing, and or the phone lines are on hold. You know, there's callers there. And I press the buttons, and it's just I can't pick them up. It's like I pick it up and I press the button, but it just stays blinking. It stays on hold. And I keep going, come on, pick up. And I just hit it. And so, yeah, there you go. So
there you go.
Well, I guess, I don't know. I feel like maybe that means you've crossed some sort of mental threshold where you are now, you've internalized the show as a serious commitment.
Maybe.
As a serious form of employment, Dawn Taylor.
Which means that it's now something, like everything else in my life, to panic and stress
yeah.
over.
Well, it's yet another slice of neuroses that you can add to your own particular mental pastiche, to the tapestry that is part of your your
crazy.
Emotional richness. No, see, I wasn't going to say crazy. I was going to say that it's part of the rich pageant that goes on inside your soul. That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
All right, it's like 3:30. So we could try to do both today. We could do this quasi greatest song ever. We could and then do the top five, or we could do one or the other. What do you have a particular schedule?
Why don't we do the greatest song ever?
Are you
and
sure?
Then we'll save the top five for tomorrow.
Are you positive
yeah.
about this?
All yeah.
right. Okay. So I should just say, and this, I keep referring to this as sort of the greatest song ever, and it really. That is actually a specific sort of, you know, segment we do where, you know, I write it and we have this whole, you know, music bed that plays underneath it, and where we're discussing something that is, you know, in my opinion, one of the definitive songs, of recent history or whatever. And we've done, I think, is that your phone?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Please turn off all cell phones prior to performance, Dawn Taylor. Okay, now you have to answer the call on the air. I don't care who it is. You have to answer. Okay, let's just find out what he wants. Just go ahead and answer that.
Hello?
I'll just wait here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm doing good. I'm on the air, and I forgot to turn the phone off.
Yeah, that's great. So I'll just sit here and amuse myself.
I'll give you a call in a few minutes.
All right.
Bye.
No, so anyway, and then I'm sorry. Are you done?
I'm finished. Now.
Okay, thanks. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Best day ever.
All right. Are your headphones caught in your hair?
Yes.
All right. We're just going to end the show now. I've made the executive decision.
You're not going to do the song?
I'll do it tomorrow.
Okay.
I'll do it tomorrow. Here's the thing. It seems like at this point I'm just artificially elongating a show that you wanted to end like an hour and a half ago.
What? No, I've been having a wonderful time.
I'm not saying that in a negative way.
No.
I'm just saying it seems like you came out of the gate a little shaky today. But it just seems like in your head – I'm not saying you've sounded bad. To me, you sounded fine, and this show, I think, has sounded good. I'm just saying, I imagine that inside your head, you have like one eye, like the third eye, so this is like on the clock the whole time, just going like, when will this wretched day of torment be over?
See, no, not really, because I was aware that we had plenty of time, so it's like, it might not be going well, but you know, we can just roll with it.
All right. Well, in any event, I think it's probably best if we do. We've already been like 2.5 hours here. So what we'll do is I'll fold this into tomorrow, and we'll put them in different sections of the show so we're not just sort of piling everything back to back. So tomorrow we'll do your top five songs from your musical, and we'll do this. We'll just round out the week with this sort of this song of note. That's a good way to end the week, actually.
Yay.
And so forth. And tomorrow I believe we will have confirmation of a guest. Well, we have two things. Tomorrow, I think we'll have confirmation of when Terry Brooks is going to be on. And then we will have confirmation of this guest that I believe is being – I believe that is being worked out right now. I believe those details are being solidified as we speak. So I'll have all of that tomorrow on the Rick Emerson radio program. Until then, don't forget the show is available on iTunes. You can also find it in an archived form at rickemerson.com. And don't forget that the live stream actually runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you can find that right here as soon as this show ends. We'll have a little musical interlude followed by the encore of the day's Legion of News. And and the encore of this very fine radio program. So that is all coming up in just moments. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler. Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Thursday, August 26th, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.